This conference will now be recorded.
Thank you. I'm going to call the October 6, 2020 meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we'll begin with our newest member, Councilmember Briles, leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay. Councilmember Briles, we can't hear you. Let's try that again. I'm sorry. Your mic is on. You're unmuted.
To keep us going, let's have the Mayor Pro Tem lead us. We'll give Councilmember Briles an opportunity to keep the meeting.
Right. I pledge allegiance,
To
the flag of the
United States of America,
and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. City Clerk, roll call, please.
Yes, thank you. Mayor Holtzclaw?
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Vanell?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
And Councilmember Briles?
Here.
Excuse me. Okay, we are going to move on and start with audience communication. Opportunity to speak to the council, 3 minutes.
Yes.
We'll unmute you, and if anyone, I see Barbara, you'll go first. If there's anyone else on the line, can follow. So please begin with your name and address, and then 3 minutes. Thank you.
Barb Heidel, 1401 144th Place Southeast, Mill Creek. I wish to congratulate Benjamin for being elected for the council seat, and I just wish to welcome you to our council. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak to the council tonight? Going once? Twice? Sold. We will have another opportunity at the end of the meeting. So we will now move on to public hearing on the presentation on the preliminary budget. City Manager and Finance Director.
Mayor, we were going to talk about item C. Relating to vote tabulations.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. I have a budget up from agenda from 2 years ago, and I was trying to look for something earlier today. I apologize. City Attorney and City Manager, please the vote tabulations from the meeting last week. I'm sorry.
No, not a problem. Thank you, Mayor. At the special election last week, when Councilman Benjamin Briles was appointed and voted in by his colleagues, what I neglected to do is after each round of voting, actually announce the tabulations. It was a long night, and we apologize for that happening. We immediately, in our press release, announced the tabulations. We publicized them. And this evening, what we want to do is formally read the vote tabulations into the record as directed and advised by our interim city attorney, Grant Degenger. Grant, you have anything else you want to add further to that?
Yes. First, welcome, Councilmember Briles. Congratulations. And the one other thing we would do after we read the after the city clerk reads the tabulations in is I would ask that the council consider a motion to include the ballot as part of the minutes of the special meeting of the City Council of September 29th.
Okay, so I'll read the ballots now. Ballot 1, Round 1, Carmen Fisher, 1 vote by Councilmember Steckler. Mark Harmsworth, 2 votes by Councilmembers Bond and Cavallari. Benjamin Briles, 1 vote by Mayor Pro Tem Vignell. Sid Siegel, one vote by Mayor Holtzclaw. Ballot one, round two. Carmen Fisher received one vote by Councilmember Steckler. Mark Harmsworth, two votes by Councilmember Bond and Councilmember Cavallari. Benjamin Bryles, one vote by Mayor Holtzclaw. Sid Siegel, one vote by Mayor Pro Tem Vanell. Ballot one, round three. Carmen Fisher, one vote by Councilmember Steckler. Mark Harmsworth, two votes by Councilmember Bond and Councilmember Cavallari. Benjamin Bryles, two votes, Mayor Holtzclaw and Mayor Pro Tem Vanell. Ballot one, round four. Mark Harmsworth, two votes by Councilmember Bond and Councilmember Cavallari. Benjamin Bryles, three votes by Mayor Holtzclaw, Mayor Pro Tem Vanell, and Councilmember Steckler.
Thank you, Mayor. Oh, go ahead.
And then, Mayor, if we could have a motion from the council to include the ballots in the minutes of the special meeting of the City Council on September 29th, that would be good. The minutes will be coming, I think, at the next meeting, but I just want to make sure that's included.
So moved.
Second.
Mayor Pro Tem got that one. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those, please unmute, and all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Did anyone abstain? Motion carries 6-0. Now that I am on tonight's agenda, we are going to move into the presentation of regarding the legal fees. So City Attorney and City Manager, I believe, are going to take this one.
Thank you, Mayor. On behalf of the city, we want to acknowledge the many questions that our council has received from residents and the coverage that we have received as it relates to the city's legal fees. Although much of the discussion relating to our legal costs is privileged and confidential and has been vetted and discussed in executive session, what council has made patently clear is that they would like and has asked for some communication that is appropriate to the community so that we can talk where and how appropriate as it relates to the legal fees discussion. Our overarching goal is to be able to reduce the city's costs, and we would like to begin first with a discussion relating to the legal needs that we've had to incur thus far. We've categorized them according to ongoing matters that require legal support, periodic matters, and then litigation and administrative proceedings. So I'm going to turn the floor over to our interim city attorney, Grant Degginger. Mr. Degginger, can you begin, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. City Manager. And Naomi, if you could provide the first slide from that slide deck, that would be great.
It should be up. Can everybody see it?
Yeah, and then if we move to the next slide. That's great, thank you. So I thought I would start out by briefly discussing what the city's legal needs are. When we talk about the activities of the city does many different things. And not surprisingly, it covers the needs of the city require a lot of legal advice and assistance in various capacities. So what I've tried to do here with this slide is to identify sort of the care by three different categories, the kind of legal needs that the city has to provide. There are those things that are provided on a regular ongoing basis. One of them is public records consultation and conforming with the Public Records Act and meeting the requirements and the needs of the community in that regard. So this is included in the legal budget. It involves some legal issues, but it also involves public communication as well. Obviously, there's ongoing legal advice on governance and compliance processes, serving as your interim city attorney, being in your meetings and assisting in the governance process. The city council also needs assistance, and the city needs assistance in providing overall operational advice in the various city departments, and that can be a variety of needs, whether it's in the planning process for land use and zoning, whether it's contracting as it relates to public works. It can be a variety of different places. And there's a lot of ongoing employment law assistance and advice and counsel that goes on in the HR functions. There's also various manners of civil enforcement. That could be anything from enforcing your dangerous animal ordinance to other methods of enforcement where there are needs and things like nuisances and issues of that kind. Then, of course, you have a criminal prosecution and defense function as well. Then, of course, there are times when you have periodic needs. They may not happen all the time, but they do come up from time to time. The city buys real estate like you did earlier this year, where you needed assistance in conducting and closing that transaction. You have franchises where you've had assistance from a council in working through your cable franchise recently. You've also had employment issues where you've had complaints that needed to be investigated, issues involving discipline and termination. Those are things that, and that's been a cost driver this year. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then there are ongoing periodic labor negotiations where you hire outside counsel to assist in the labor negotiation process or attending to issues that are raised in the collective bargaining process. And finally, there's another group of proceedings where you have legal assistance, and that is defending the city if there's a tort claim, whether it be a slip and fall or some other claim of negligence by the city. There can also be litigation over employment issues. There can be construction-related claims that have to be attended to and when there are construction projects going on, and other kinds of litigation that from time to time occur. Some of those are handled through your contract with the, through your insurance program. Some of them are not insured and are handled through counsel. So that gives you an idea of generally, the numerous ways in which the city seeks and needs legal assistance from time to time and also on an ongoing basis. Why don't we move to the next slide if we could, Naomi? So as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that the city is charged with is responding to public records requests. And this is an area that has had increasing costs and increasing amounts of service required. This year, you've had about a roughly 25% increase in the number of civil, non-police related Public Records Act inquiries. And a lot of them have had ties to either potential or existing litigation, so it has required a fair amount of time-intensive work to respond to. So the first column there identifies what those costs have been. And then the third column talks about and identifies the non-Public Records Act work and costs that have been incurred by the city. A number of those, much of that cost has been driven by what we would call non-recurring issues, issues that have involved investigations or claims flowing out of terminations or employment-related investigation issues. Why don't we move to the next slide? Yami, can we move to the next one?
Can you see? It should say former city attorney. Is it not showing?
There we go. There it is. Okay, thank you. For some reason, my screen was a little slow showing up. So what we're trying to show here is there were a number of other sources of cost for city and legal advice during the last year. Part of it was the work of their former city attorney, and also part of it is related to two of the functions I talked about previously, your prosecutorial functions, as well as your duties to provide defense for those who need indigent defense. So again, we're rolling these costs together, and if we move to the next slide, I think you'll see where you are in terms of where you are versus your budget. And this is what this slide shows is where these costs have come from on the legal services, which include Public Records Act work, investigations, as well as litigation, the prosecutorial functions, and then the indigent defense functions. And that's where you are on your costs incurred to date.
Grant?
Yes.
Question, or actually, if you could help explain why legal counsel gets involved in the PRA request, why it's more than just someone requesting a document and providing the document?
Certainly. That's an excellent question, Mayor. The reason is this: a number of the requests emanate from either investigations that were taking place in the employment arena or from matters that were in litigation or in which litigation was threatened. That means there's potentially questions of privilege that relate to the city that require review by a counsel before the documents can be released. So that requires an extra layer of effort and consideration. And that's the reason why it's taken additional time and resources.
And partly, isn't it also because there are exceptions to the Public Records Act of what is a public record subject to disclosure? So sometimes there's questions, aren't there, about whether a document is discoverable under the PRA?
There are. There's not only the attorney-client type of privileges, but there are also privileges and exemptions for privacy of employees and related privileges related to also whether the document requested was something that was used in the deliberative process. So those are several of the kinds of exemptions that we deal with on a fairly regular basis.
Thank you.
I think we can move on to the next slide. Excuse me. So as I mentioned earlier, one of the variables in costs that we're dealing with are costs that are emanating from either employment actions that were taking place, either terminations, and there were several terminations that led to either ULPs or negotiated resolutions. There were several matters involving employee complaints of either a hostile work environment or conduct requiring an investigation, conduct of perhaps a superior or others. There were also several unexpected and unanticipated costs. Certainly, there were a number of contracts that had to be reviewed and employment related work that needed to be addressed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So you had to develop policies and procedures, and you also had to address how certain contracts that the city already had in place were going to respond to the situation involving COVID-19. Also, there were two Public Records Act lawsuits that were brought that had to be defended as well. So this slide, and then if we can move to the next slide, summarizes a number of those issues that had to be dealt with this year. The good news is there are no current investigations, and hopefully a number of these items are either going to be resolved or going to be resolved through litigation that's currently underway. The point being, hopefully this is an area where costs will be going down and not up. Although the city doesn't always have control of how matters are litigated and to the extent to which they're litigated or potentially litigated in multiple forums. If we can move to the next slide. This is an area that I thought would be important for the council to give some consideration to, which is how might we begin to address opportunities for cost reduction. And I think the city manager had a couple of comments to include in this section.
Yeah, thank you, Grant. Mayor and council, presently under the city's public records policy, we at least have legislation that appears to authorize administration to charge for certain costs related to the processing of public records. However, the legislation itself, we believe, is deficient because there was no public hearing that was provided for before the legislation was voted on by council. This would have occurred a couple of years ago. We are going to, in a future session, be bringing forth the legislation as well as the public hearing aspect of it so that we can do this properly. And we intend then to have a uniform application of this authorizing legislation. What we've learned is that the enforcement, or not enforcement, but the charging for public records was spotty at best, and we've not yet been able to discern what the method was to it. But it's an area that we want to clean up, and we want to be able to at least recoup some costs as it relates to the Public Records Act. Grant, I think you were going to hit the next two bullet points, and I was going to hit the final.
Sure, I will brief. Another way of addressing, or at least trying to resolve matters early, I mean, anytime that you can improve your internal HR processes, you can improve communication, and most likely you can respond to any complaints or concerns early and avoid litigation. That is something that I think there's an opportunity to do, and it would be very productive in terms of reducing legal costs. The other is one that's been ongoing, which is the work in the reorganization work in the Public Works and Development Services departments to improve processes, and also both on the contracting side and in other areas as well. So those are some other areas, and I think City Manager was going to talk about the ongoing initiative regarding contract management protocols.
Yeah, so I have entered into a contract with a consultant to perform a contract management and best practices audit with regard to how the city manages its contracts. One of the things that we have discovered even before the audit is that just the sheer lack of uniformity and spotty compliance with regard to the city's own policies and protocols. What we're intending to do is develop a master template as part of the work to bring us into compliance in all the departments and to go forward with a much more improved process that we're able to in-house refine thereafter. This is not rocket science, but when it's been neglected, even examples of last year, at the very end of December, all of a sudden, all these contracts were coming at us requiring approval for renewal without doing any of the requisite diligence, cost comparison, going out to the market, at least in areas where we're able to see whether or not the pricing and the quality is competitive with what's available in the market. We think that we can develop a uniform process, uniform contract templates, where rather than going to our legal team with each individual contract, we can build out a template and a plan and a protocol that going forward, the staff will be able to work with internally rather than having to always expend the legal fees. But it's been a lot of work addressing these on a one-off basis. What we're trying to do is get in front of it with the best practices audit.
Any of the council members, is that the end of the presentation?
It is. If there's questions, we'll be happy to answer them.
Neither, there's the screen back on. Anyone have any questions? The city attorney or city manager? Councilmember Steckler.
I had a little trouble getting to my mute button. Hi, Grant. I have two questions on this report. One, just a point of clarification, because I think there might be some people who saw this and there might be some confusion on it. But you mentioned that one of the cost overruns in 2019 was due to a claim of hostile work environment, which my understanding, that particular claim was in 2018. That was the legal costs associated with it. Was there another hostile work environment? Were there two of them, or just the one claim?
I might be able to answer this quicker, Councilman Steckler. There were two. There was a subsequent one.
Okay. There's another one I don't know about. Okay.
The one that there was a complaint filed with PERC before I came on board, and it was immediately before I came on board that it was filed, and that was the one that I think it was the first executive session that we talked about. So that's the one that that is referring to.
Okay, enough said. I just wanted to clarify that just in case there was any question. The other question I got, Grant, was in looking at the cost overruns, it appeared to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears that I always like to look at when I see overruns in so many, an area where there's so many different opportunities for a cost overrun, it appears, and maybe I'm wrong, but it appears that the investigation element is the single most prolific area of cost overrun. Am I correct in that assumption, or am I wrong?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. There is an element of the investigation process that was there were, I think, approximately four significant investigations. There were costs associated with that in several different ways. One is the hiring of an outside investigator, and those costs were significant. And then also, a lot of those investigations resulted in follow-on actions of some kind or another. And that's an element that drove those things. Sometimes there were cost savings because matters got resolved without litigation, council member. Sometimes that was not the case. So it was a bit of a mixed bag there.
I'm sorry, let me rephrase it then. What would help me whenever I see a cost overrun is I'd like to see what made up the expenses in 19 by costs. In other words, the buckets. And I'd like to see what they were in 19 and see what they are in 20 or see what they're in 18 to 19, whatever, so that I can specifically see where the culprits are, where the cost overruns are associated with, so that I'm comfortable that where the cost overruns are coming from, we've isolated them and we have an action to change that in the future. Because right now I'm not seeing the actual costs attributed to particular buckets. Does that make sense?
That's correct. We haven't broken them down by particular matters for a number of reasons, partly because some of these are still in litigation. And so dealing with that in a public session would be difficult without potentially revealing confidences and secrets that are related to the litigation itself. But if there's a way, we can look and see if there's a way to break this down a little bit more by category, if we can. Let me see if there's a way to do that, and I will respond to you and follow up.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just caution us using the terminology cost overrun, because as the city attorney indicated, a lot of these matters weren't anticipated. So it's hard for me to characterize those as a cost overrun because we weren't anticipating any cost for some of this litigation because we weren't anticipating. Generally, I think it's important for the public and the council to know about the Public Records Act is, and its intent is laudable. We want government to be transparent, but the act has evolved over time where there's no sideboards and very little protections for municipalities. So literally, a person could submit a public records request that says, I want every email from between X and Y up to today and going forward after today. So it's an ongoing request. There's no sideboards on what people can request. And not that this has happened in our city, but in other jurisdictions, there are people who literally make a living with Public Records Act and then suing jurisdictions for failing to comply because there are time limits that have to be complied with. And the sanctions that can be hit with local jurisdictions on local jurisdictions are very significant. King County was hit with a judgment a couple years ago, excess of $1 million, if I recall correctly. Grant would probably know better. So that's in part why the public records, and we see from the information we've been provided, we've had to spend $200,000 more this year than last year just on those requests alone. But part of that is because not just the issues that the city attorney highlighted, but if we're not careful, our downside is significantly higher if we get hit for violating the Public Records Act for not responding correctly. So the fine balance, AWC has been trying to get some amendments to the act for years and has been unsuccessful, but we need to find a balance in the legislature between the need for being transparent but not being onerous on local jurisdictions. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I actually have a question from Michael just regarding something that he just mentioned that just kind of stuck in my mind. I wasn't aware of Michael. So am I to understand that we have not been actually re-getting bids for contracts every year? We've just been going into all our contracts without checking the pricing. Is that what you're saying, or something different? I misunderstood.
Yeah, no, Mayor Pro Tem, what we're seeing is an inconsistent application of the procurement policies, and most notably with a lack of documentation in terms of where we have and haven't at least gone out and requested competing costs. This is something that is time consuming when it's not a part of the regular protocol. And as I discovered last year in November of December, with regard to a couple of items, we can do a better job. So I'm not saying that we have or we haven't. All I'm saying is that there isn't documentation that would substantiate if the diligence was performed in those areas before recommendations were made to renew. This contract management issue isn't only something there's a common theme in public entities, but it happens more than anyone would think in private entities as well. And typically what vendors do is wait till the last minute to say, oops, by the way, you are almost out of time. We can renew this thing really quickly. Hurry, hurry, sign the paperwork, and we move on. What I observed last year at the end of the year is any indication. The habits of this municipality are no different than many other public entities and private entities. So all we really want to do is a best practice performance audit, see where we need to improve, how we align with our own current policies for procurement, and to just be able to have a key figure amongst the management team that these practices are followed as a matter of routine throughout the year. And that we would actually perhaps have a chart that shows when contracts are expiring so that we can do a number of things, not only with regard to within our institution, but possibly looking outside of the city of Mill Creek to other government agencies and partners. There might be areas for us to be able to aggregate our purchases with other regional public entities in a way that could have us a joint aggregate pool having a much larger purchasing power. So step one is to get our own house in order. Then once we've organized that data, reach out to our partners in the region. I'm thinking particularly the low-hanging fruit would be smaller governments, and find out, hey, by the way, where are you purchasing or how are you purchasing a particular fungible good? And is there a way in which we can align our purchases so that we have a greater leverage with regard to the market and possibly solicit more competitive bids? We're hoping that this step one of the audit, again, cleans up our own act, but then has us being able to go with reliable data into the region to see where other opportunities might lie within this region.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Any other questions? I think this has been helpful, and we've requested that Michael try to update us quarterly on the pending litigation, which we can't discuss in open session, but in terms of the fees, we can to some extent discuss that like we have tonight so that we can stay on top and have discussions publicly about what's driving the fees. As the city attorney said, we're hopeful that as some of this litigation runs its course, those fees will start declining, but we are mindful of it. We will be going forward. Okay, moving on to our now we're on the study session for the budget with the preliminary. Am I correct in the right item? No, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead again. It's Director Todd's opportunity to provide his first presentation to the council on the stormwater.
Yes, thank you very much. So, City Manager, did you want to say any preparatory comments, or should I go for it?
Yeah, I'm going to say Councilman Todd, but it's Mr. Todd, Director Todd. Just briefly, in the last couple of months, it's been an interesting time as it relates to compliance issues. I keep talking about compliance, and we're working hard to finally right the ship here. After a few key resignations recently, our administrative team, led by Grace Lockett, reached out to the Department of Ecology and learned that the city Creek is out of compliance in some areas by almost 3 years. This is problematic for a number of reasons, which Director Todd will talk about in a moment, but The really important one was that we are looking at a substantial amount of fees if we don't get our own house in order. Again, 3 years is unacceptable. I will tell you that we have earned the trust of the Department of Ecology with regard to the representations we have made and acted upon, but we're in a trust but verified mode with Matt Kaufman and the Department of Ecology. They're pleased by what Dr. Todd and his team has done in lightning speed, and we're here to report not only on our progress, but what are the mandates and the things that we need to do in order to continue to earn the trust of the Department of Ecology going forward. Our goal is to steer well clear of fines and to not report and perform at a C- grade point average. We want to excel and hopefully become a model in this area for how stormwater management occurs. I cannot thank Director Todd and his team for what they've done, again, in lightning speed. Thank you so much, sir. Mr. Todd?
Yeah, thank you. So we're going to talk about the stormwater management plan tonight. And that is a required part of what we need to get done, and it's required that we have this update tonight. So thank you for being available to talk to us tonight, Council. Typically, this plan would have been done as part of our annual report that is due each March. The current cycle for our what's called our National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, NPDES, the new cycle for that permit is from 2019 to 2024. And we would have made our first report under that plan. Under that permit cycle in March of 2020. Part of our failures in making that report is we did not have a plan in place for 2020 with respect to how we manage our stormwater. And in fact, hadn't had a plan in place since 2018. So that's the thing we're going to talk about tonight. We already checked one of the boxes with the Department of Ecology that we got that post on our website. The next step was to have the meeting tonight and talk about that. And there's lots more steps in front of us. We are on a path to recovery that is agreeable to the Department of Ecology, as the city manager said, but this is tenuous. We are way behind. This is all stuff that should have been done and talked about last March. So we're very lucky and gracious to Stacy Clear, who has really done the lion's share of the work for us to get us up to speed and help guide us to where we need to go. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Stacy, who's got this presentation. We'll talk about all of the aspects of the permit that's required, and then we'll have a chance to come back and talk a little bit about what we're going to do. I will say at this early stage, if you want to know specific dollars and people loads to get this done, it is still in a work in progress. But you'll be hearing more from us throughout the year, particularly in the next 5 months. There's a lot of work to be done, and it's not all going to be cheap, but it is stuff that we need to do, and it's just been put off for a while. Let me turn it over to Stacy. Stacy, take it away.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Just to give you a little information about myself, I am Stacy Clear. I have been with Gray and Osborne for about 23 years now. I'm a principal there, stormwater engineer, and I deal with this NPDES Phase 2 permit, which I'm going to talk to you about tonight. So first, I'm going to give you kind of a background of the permit. Then we will go into what the various different elements are of that permit. We'll talk about the areas that the city was not in compliance with over this past year in 2019. And we will then talk about where to go from there. And just in case you were wondering, I do not know who that guy is in the photo. It's a stock photo, but at least you're going to have some scenery to look at if I get a little too boring. So, all right, next slide, please. So to give you a little background about what is this permit about? Well, it's really intended for cities to reduce the amount of pollutants that are entering stormwater. It's really born from the Clean Water Act that started in the 70s. It's a 5-year long permit. It's actually been around since 2007, so for 13 years now. But this latest rendition of the permit, it actually started last year in 2019, and it goes for, of course, another 5 years till 2024. It's overseen by the Department of Ecology. You are not alone in this. There are 83 cities in Western Washington and 5 counties that have to do the very same thing that Mill Creek has to do. And so one of these cities actually is the city of Shelton. They're kind of a brand new permittee. They haven't had to deal with it in the past. They came to us and said, what do you think it's going to take the staff doing all these requirements that are part of this permit? So in our analysis, we were estimating that it was going to take about 1.5 FTE per year to do all this. So I just want to bring that point home that, as Mike mentioned, this is a very extensive permit. It takes a lot of staffing, a lot of funding to do. So one of the elements of the permit is to create what's called a stormwater management plan, or SWAMP. Ecology loves their acronyms, so SWAMP is one of them. And the SWAMP is really just a five-year look ahead to tell you how this is how we're going to meet the permit requirements. Next slide, please. So we'll begin to talk about what those various elements are of the permit and this SWAMP, which you hopefully you received a copy of that. It's also available on the city's website. But essentially what this permit entails, we're going to go into each one of these in more detail, but it's got a little bit of planning related to stormwater. There's education component. There's mapping. There's some more of the boots on the ground, sort of getting out into the field and looking for spills. There's also operations maintenance and a little bit of monitoring and reporting as well. Next slide. So the first element is the comprehensive stormwater planning aspect. And amongst that, there's a few things that the city needs to look at. One of them is simply to look at all the city's plans and policies, and you need to look at it to make sure that stormwater is just not getting shoved under the rug. So for instance, the city's comprehensive plan, is stormwater being mentioned? Or if you look at your six-year transportation plan, have you thought about stormwater when you thought about what street jobs are we going to do around the city? Another part of this element is to make sure that you have codes in place that allow what's called low impact development. So it's like rain gardens, porous pavement, which the city already does. It's just something that we will continue to allow. And then yet another fun acronym from Ecology. This one's called a SMAP, a Stormwater Management Action Plan. And what a SMAP is that it's basically a small water quality plan. So you look around the city and you say, we recognize some of the older areas of the city don't have stormwater facilities. They don't have facilities in the ground to help clean stormwater. So where can we put these in the future and how much is that going to cost? Next slide. Another element of the permit is education. And with this, it's really twofold. One, the city simply needs to educate the public on various stormwater topics. So on your city website, you do actually talk about various different stormwater things. But then there's a second aspect, it's called a behavior change campaign. And what that entails, it says if we were to go to a business and we go up and we need to survey them beforehand, what do you know about stormwater? Do you know that you're not supposed to be dumping grease down the drain? And then we provide them the education, and then we come back afterwards and survey them again to say, have you followed the things that were taught? So it is likely that the city will be part of what's called a dumpster outreach group, DOG, yet another fun acronym. And so this behavior change campaign is more of a regional system where the city will kind of join with other cities in the area to go to businesses and make sure that they're educating them basically on their dumpsters and making sure they're not leaching into the stormwater. So a third element of the permit is the public involvement participation. This is actually one of the easiest parts of the permit. It's really just allowing the public to comment on this SWAMP or this five-year look ahead. So we're talking about it tonight in front of the public. It's on the city's website. And then Mike had already mentioned this annual report. Every March, the city has to fill out this report, turn it into Ecology, and say, here's how we met all the requirements for the previous year. Next slide. Yet another element of the permit involves mapping. This simply means the city has to have some electronic form of their stormwater base map, which is the city already has. And then the city also needs to put points on that map that says everywhere a private pipe is joining the city's public stormwater system, we need to put a dot there and note that on the map. Next slide. Okay, this is the real boot on the ground sort of aspect to it. It's called illicit discharge detection and elimination, or IDDE. What it really means are spills. So what the permit is after is they want the city to try to prevent spills. And so the city is required to go look at 12% of their system annually. So 12% of all the catch basins in the city need to be looked at to make sure you're looking at it and saying, do you see any spills? Is there any oil? Did somebody put paint upstream? Those sorts of things that need to try to prevent. And then if there is a spill, the city has to document that, include that as part of Ecology's database. And then yet another thing the permit requires is that you have codes in place so that you're not dumping paint down the drain like the guy in this picture. And then lastly, staff needs to be trained on how to look for these spills. Next slide. Another aspect of the permit involves basically development, new development, redevelopment. And so the city simply needs to make sure they have stormwater standards in place, which the city does. And then when new plans come in the door, then the city has, I believe the city currently has a consultant looks at those plans and someone like myself, an engineer that says, okay, do they have the proper stormwater facility? Are they going to be installing those flow control or water quality facilities? And not only is it good enough just to see it on paper, but the city's also required to make sure that it's in, that during construction that that facility goes in place, it goes in correctly. And not just the facilities, but we need to make sure that erosion control is being handled as well. So this picture here on the right shows a bunch of dirt that is being discharged downstream. It's that sort of thing that the city is trying to prevent from happening. Next slide. Operation and maintenance is another element of the permit. This one is, you know, in my personal opinion, it's actually pretty onerous. It takes a lot of staffing, this section. So the city is supposed to be inspecting their catch basins every 2 years. The city has over 2,600 catch basins, so you can imagine someone's got to walk around to at least 1,300 catch basins every year. Not only do they have to look at catch basins, but they have to look at things called flow control. So it's like a detention pond, a large pond that holds water back and slowly meters it out. City needs to look at those ponds, or there's the equivalent of a large vault under the ground. They need to look at those as well, any water quality treatment facilities. And not only the city's own facilities, but private facilities as well. So they have to make sure that these are not just being inspected, but also that they're being maintained. And then, of course, the staff has to be trained on how to do this.
Can I jump in on that point real quick before you move on to the next slide?
Sure.
Can you go back? That second bullet is really important. Director Tott and I have talked about this. I think this is where there has been confusion with some of the HOAs in the city over the years. The HOAs, you know, as you know, have made calls for the city to maintain the private detention facilities. And part of the justification I've heard is, well, the city inspects them, so it must be their responsibility. Not the case. On the face of the plats, the subdivisions and the homeowners associations for those developments are first and foremost primarily responsible for maintaining those facilities. The city has a separate obligation, which we're discussing tonight under our state permit with the Department of Ecology, to inspect them, but it's an entirely separate legal requirement. It's not one where we're primarily responsible for these detention facilities. But that's an area where we need to do a better job at educating the public on the roles and responsibilities regarding these ponds.
Certainly, yes, that's a very great point. I can tell you the city of Snohomish, they like to send out a flyer that here's how you do it, here are possibly, they don't, you know, endorse a particular contractor, but they we'll provide a list of contractors just to kind of make it easier to make it very clear where that line is. We will inspect it, but you need to maintain it. But that's a good point. Okay. One of the elements towards the end of the permit is this is a brand new element, hasn't been in any past permits before. It's called the Source Control Program. The whole intent of this really is for the city to go to various different businesses, inspect them, and to say, are you doing the proper stormwater best management practices? Are you not dumping grease down the drain? Are your dumpsters in good condition? And you're not letting things leach out into our stormwater system. Next slide. Okay, there's a monitoring and reporting aspect. Way back in the day, cities actually had to do stormwater monitoring, literally grabbing samples of creek water and looking at the data, and many cities are saying, why are we doing this? Everybody's in their own little bubble. We don't know whether what we're doing is effective or not. So they came up with a regional monitoring program. So the city just simply pays into this regional monitoring program every year. Also, we talked about the annual report that is due every March. So that's part of the permit as well. Next slide. And then the last element of the permit is something a little specific to Mill Creek and other certain jurisdictions, and it's called a total maximum daily load, or a TMDL requirement. So what this means is, if there's a water body, say North Creek, it's impaired, it has too much fecal coliform in it, or the temperature is too high, or has too much phosphorus, the state recognizes this, put it on a list, it says, okay, we're going to create a plan on how we're going to make that creek better. So Milk Creek falls into this realm of, I believe it's North Creek that has the TMDL on it. And so therefore, because of that, the city of Milk Creek specifically has to monitor. And this map here shows you the 5 monitoring locations that the city collects from. Not only does the city have to collect from those streams, but they also have to analyze the data from it as well. And then lastly, if there are any veterinarian offices in town, the city staff is supposed to go interview the people, make sure that they are doing the proper stormwater things, make sure pet waste isn't just slipping off to the stream and so forth. So next slide. So that brings us to the non-compliance history. So as mentioned earlier, the city unfortunately has not been in compliance with certain elements of this permit. In 2019 specifically, the Department of Ecology has done an audit, found that there were various different aspects of the permit that were not done. When this happens, you write what's called a G20 letter. G20 just happens to be the section of the permit that says, we recognize we did not hit the date, so we're going to tell you when we can hit the date and how we're going to remedy this. So Ecology took a look at 2019 specifically and found that there were 15 instances where the city was not in compliance with this permit during last year. And why this is important, because Ecology has the authority to charge the city $10,000 per day per instance of non-compliance. So if you think about that, that's $150,000 a day $150,000 a day until you come into compliance. So it's a very serious thing. Why did this happen? It could have been for a various number of reasons, maybe a transition of staff, maybe the staff didn't understand the language fully of the permit. But I will tell you, so I have been doing this 13 years, and it used to be Ecology, you would turn in that annual report, and Ecology would say, thank you, check the box, and push it aside. I will say now they are a lot more into the auditing aspect of this, and they're really making sure cities are complying with the permit. So you don't want to be in their bad graces. You don't want to give them just any sort of reason to fine you. It's not likely they'll fine you. I have not known for them to find many jurisdictions. I didn't think they had any, but they did tell me they had one and they were working on another. So again, you want to make sure you're in compliance and not to give them any reason to give you a chance to find you. Next slide. So this slide here lets you just kind of summarizes the various items that the city was not in compliance with. So one of them, Mike had already mentioned that swamp, that 5-year look ahead, had not been done since 2017. So we compiled that, Ecology approved it. Again, we're talking about it tonight. It's on the city website for public comment. So that has been done. The next bullet down talks about how I had mentioned that we need to have there needs to be a team that looks at all the various city plans to make sure stormwater is not being swept under the rug. So that team has not been exactly formed yet. So we had to add that to this G20 letter. The bottom bullet there, stewardship opportunities weren't provided. So that's as simple as putting on the city's website various different links to the Snohomish County Conservation District or Sound Salmon Solutions. It's just kind of a, here's how you, public, can get involved with stormwater-related issues. Going to the bullet on the upper right, the city hadn't started mapping the outfalls of where stormwater leaves the city. A lot of training never occurred, whether it's those illicit discharges that you really didn't distill, plan reviews, operation and maintenance. And then lastly, a lot of inspections of the facilities weren't done. Apparently there's 75 additional private facilities that weren't looked at, and none of those 2,600 plus catch basins were inspected as well. Next slide.
Stacy.
Yeah.
So do cities, do they normally, I know we have staff dedicated to do this when we're running at full capacity. Do most cities just contract this stuff out for the most part?
That's a good question. There's when we were doing our analysis for Shelton, to kind of look at the program as a whole, in my belief, about a third of it is something that really can be contracted out. The rest of it really does need to be done by city staff. So a lot of it is what shouldn't be, in my opinion, what shouldn't be pushed off is a lot of the inspection of the facilities, because your staff should know your facilities. Although there is kind of a workaround of, you know, for instance, I think it was mentioned that maybe we have some contractor like Bravo come out and clean all of the catch basins. At the same time, they'll be inspecting the catch basins. So that does take money. It takes time. But it's always good to have your staff member with them too, just so that they're aware of everything that's going on. So I guess to kind of answer your question, a bit of it can be provided as more of a consultant role, but I will tell you, Ecology really likes to make sure that you as a city, you're responsible, you recognize you're responsible. In fact, if you do hire somebody, like for instance, Gray and Osborne is assisting the city, we will have to write a separate letter that says, the city signs it, the president of our company signs it to say, we're helping you with this aspect of the permit. We recognize city is liable. We are helping. And so Ecology wants to make sure that everybody is understanding that city at the end is ultimately responsible for this.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So, okay, where do we go from here? Next slide. So first thing we need to do is to get in compliance with those 2019 permits. We have written the G20 letter. Ecology accepted it. In that letter, it says, here's some various dates that go up through August of next year of how we're going to meet, get into compliance with those things that were on that last slide. So not only that just takes care of last year. We still got four more years to go on this permit. So one of the recommendations is to have monthly staff meetings to make sure that we are always looking at this permit every month and making sure that we're in compliance with it. And then lastly, we really need to look at the budget. This is a lot of staffing, a lot of funding that needs to go into this very extensive permit. Next slide. So to put this in perspective, I don't expect you to read the fine detail on this. This is the 10 pages. This is the schedule of how the city is going to become, stay in compliance over the next 4 years. So you can see it is a lot of action items. And these take, it takes staffing, it takes funding. And so all of this is really necessary. If I were to have one take-home message to you as the council, it's to understand that this takes a lot of staffing and a lot of funding, all to stay in compliance and avoid that $10,000 a day from Ecology. So I think at that time, Mike and I will entertain any questions you may have.
Thanks. So,
go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was just going to say, so if you got technical questions in particular, Stacy can help us with those. In a few minutes when you're ready, I will also tell you what we are doing. And our plans are, Stacy has helped us get this plan going. We've already done quite a few things, but I also help put it in context. We do have, if you remember, we put some funding in our stormwater utility long-term financial plan that we did before. So some of these things are addressed that I can talk to you later. But let's talk about technical questions first for Stacy.
All right, that kind of took the wind out of my sails a little bit, but okay. Thanks for that. This other piece is, so if we're getting a permit for 5 years, how does that work? They give you a permit and say, go ahead, you're good to go, and then they enforce it later? I mean, I kind of don't understand how that works. If they give you a five-year permit, I would think that that means you're golden for 5 years.
It's actually that annual report is really what they are looking at every year. So this permit has different timelines throughout throughout the next 4 years. So there may not be something due until 2023. But this annual report, say for instance, next March, we're going to talk about all the things that were done or not done in 2020. Ecology literally looks at that annual report very closely. And if they see any red flags, they're going to be coming back to the city saying, why didn't you do that? Or we're going to question you on that. Or we want to see more documentation on that. So you are being held to the fire every single year to make sure you're doing those things that were due that year, that you did them appropriately.
Thank you.
Were there any other technical questions from the council? Hearing none, Stacy, thank you. And thank you to both you and Mike and Michael for getting us back on top of this.
Yeah. So Stacy, well, don't leave. So I was going to say that we have, you know, one thing Stacy had is our second block on that first column on that slide of things we needed to do. We've got our first team meeting planned for next week. Getting somebody out of planning, somebody out of police, somebody out of communications, somebody out of public works to say, what are we already doing? And we're going to go through that plan and all those schedules that she showed you there. And we're going to circle the things that are short term that we think are in a different functional areas. And we're very much going to go at this as a cross-functional team to start having these meetings to say, how do we start tackling this? Council, you're really familiar. We have spent a lot of money and time in the last few years on our stormwater pipe failures. And not making excuses for anybody, but I think we really got focused on that part of our stormwater plan and kind of forgot about some of these other things. And so I'm not worried about the past, we just got to move forward. But between now and next February, all of those ponds, all of those detention vaults, both publicly and privately owned, need to get inspected. We should have been doing that throughout the year. Some of you remember we used to have a biennial catch basin cleaning program. People still hearing okay? Yeah, we used to have the biennial catch basin cleaning program. We have not done that for a while. So Matthew Combs and I are both looking at how we can quickly jump on that to start that process. We probably have 2 years to get that cleaning done through the way the permit is done, but we've still got to get a handle on it. So there's a bunch of work there. With our stormwater utility funding, where we raised our permit fee a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, we do have funding in there for a full-time stormwater FTE of some sort. And you may remember, we also put in funding for some GIS, graphic information systems. And so those address the kinds of things Stacy was talking about in terms of funding. I think we've got the funding potentially in the, at least penciled into our budgeting, but now we need to execute and hire those people and get that program going again. So this is not all doom and gloom, but there's a ton of work, because we're having to run really fast to catch up. I think I'll leave it at that. If there's other questions about what we're trying to do.
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you. I don't know, excuse me. I'm not sure who the best person to answer it is. I'll start with you, Director Todd. 3 years out of compliance. That's unacceptable. We thought as a council that these issues were being addressed. There was an allusion, it was alluded to as to what might have been the causation for us getting so far out of whack. Do you feel comfortable that whatever was in place has been corrected so that this doesn't happen again?
I think we know what we need to do. Think back in history, Mark. We used to have Marcy Chu, who was a stormwater technician. And she quietly, as staff, quietly did all this testing, all the inspecting. And we as council didn't see that because the staff person was just doing it. We as council only saw when it came as big contracts to fix that broken stormwater pipe or approve a $200,000 catch basin cleaning program. When Marcy left, I think honestly, we kind of lost focus on those ongoing things that staff was quietly doing, weren't celebrated, but they were very important. What's happened in this new permit cycle is they've stepped up the requirements. So it's no longer adequate to be doing what Marcy used to be doing. So we no longer have the Marcy, but the new permit cycle that started in 2019 also upped the bar. So is it fixed today? No. Am I looking at the stormwater FTE for hire? Yes, we need to get that going, but we're also gonna have to do some scrambling with some consultants. As Stacy referred to, we may have to hire some outside people to help, because there's 100 things to go look at between now and February, and 100 is a bunch.
Okay, well if they change things in 2019, then we stumble into COVID and some of the staff changes in 2020. I can be pretty forgiving about that. That doesn't sound the same as we were 3 years out of whack, which is what I heard at the beginning.
Well, we're 3 years out of whack because the last plan that Marcy wrote before she left in 2017 was the 2018 plan. I don't know if that 2018 plan was ever officially talked about much. It was on our website. But when the Department of Ecology is looking for this permit, which starts in 2019, they're looking and going, you don't have a permit. You don't have a plan in place. And so when Stacy says 3 years, it's kind of been 3 years since Stacy wrote, Marcy wrote that last plan. That's where she got the 3 years.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
We're bad. We got to work on it.
Michael, then the Mayor Pro Tem.
Just very quickly, the one area, Councilman Bond, that is critical is the 3 years without sewer maintenance, without catch basin maintenance.
Yeah.
And that's a significant lapse. So that's one of the areas that resonates with most folks. And there are others, as were outlined by Director Todd and Stacy.
Thank you, Director Todd. You slightly alluded to what my question is kind of about. I know we have money in the budget to hire that full-time employee that was based off the income that was coming in as part of the stormwater fees. Now, when we passed our, so I don't know who needs to answer this, when we as a council passed our resolution to freeze hiring for the rest of the year, how does that impact the ability to be able to hire this person? And do we need to do something as a council in order to allow us to hire that person? Jeff is raising his hand, so.
I apologize, I can't see the screen. But if you don't mind, Mayor Pro Tem Vignall. So when we motioned for the hiring freeze, it was contingent up to the point that we approved or adopted a budget amendment, which we did at the very next meeting. So the hiring freeze is not in effect right now.
Okay, perfect. And so, we have the money coming in from the stormwater fees to pay for this person, correct, Director Don and Jeff?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Jeff, thank you.
Councilor Cavallari.
Thanks, Mayor. What Councilor Vignall just said was my understanding too, is we went through this process, I want to say about a year ago, and we raised fees and we raised monies, we borrowed monies, and we put this package together. So to sound like we're so far behind is a little alarming. But you know, I guess you kind of get a mulligan with COVID and a couple of other things, but the same thing, the same idea is I thought this was all being addressed at this point, and we had, you know, people in the pipeline ready to come on board, that the money's there. So if that's all, we just have to execute it. If that's kind of what you're saying, then I accept that.
Yep. Any further questions? Michael, comment?
Yeah, in response to Councilman Cavallari's comment, we were poised to hire a stormwater engineer before COVID hit. In fact, we had an interview with a candidate after we had formally shut down City Hall. At the time, it was mutually decided both by this very promising candidate as well as the staff that we were going to hold to just see exactly what would happen and what would fall out as it related to the pandemic. But we were poised to make that hire. We had a candidate that we thought was very promising for us.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Anything else we need to ask? Councilmember Bryles.
So, test, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm not sure that this is the right place for the question, but I am interested to know what's a rough estimate for how long one of those inspections takes of one of those 2,600 catch basins we have to review per year or per 2 years? How many crew, how many hours are they there?
Stacy, got a guess?
Yeah, I guess that's a good question. I'm sure I've done this this exercise some point in my life. Just talking out loud, I would say it takes maybe 10, 15 minutes per catch basin to look at that. So, yeah, I guess you could do the math from there. Say, and then you have to travel between each one, you know, say 4 or 5 catch basins an hour and 8 hours in a day, so 40 a day. So maybe that gives you some sort of sense. That's one person. Of course, it'll speed up if you get 2 to 3 staff doing it as well. Oftentimes what I see cities doing is there tends to be a slow time in the winter. They tend to you kind of want to do it more in the summer so that you see if you see something unusual going through the catch basin. It's, you know, if it's been dry and hasn't been raining and yet you see some flow, that's your sign that, you know, something's not right upstream. So but oftentimes staff will say this is kind of my rainy day activities, really is they fit it in between all their regular other chores that they have to do. So that's what I tend to see, is it tends to be a fill-in, unless you're behind the eight ball, which I honestly have seen a number of cities that way, and they have to go around and scramble and try to do these day after day after day just to meet the deadline.
And the inspections, I assume, are separate and apart from then having to follow up and send out a Vactor truck if it's determined to be clogged or needs to be cleaned out.
The way the permit is written, you need to inspect these catch basins. If you see something wrong with them, you need to do that maintenance within 6 months for that particular catch basin.
And I'll offer, I think what we used to do as a city was we had every other year we did half of the catch basins and we cleaned them every other year. And in the process of cleaning, I suspect Marcy Chu went along and looked over their shoulder and did the inspection. But what you're really doing during the cleaning is you're cleaning out the sump of the collected material so it doesn't flow through your pipes. And so I think you can combine those things. And so I think while the contractor was vectoring these out, we were going along with. And so I think that would be one way to do it. But the permit just really says you got to inspect them and you got to maintain the ones that are full. There may be a better way to do this long term where we collect some data. There's a provision in the permit that if it's a 2-year cycle, if we go for 4 years and prove that we don't have to clean this one quite so often, you can get on a different cycle. But we've got a lot of data to collect before we're there.
Councilmember Bryles?
And so as a follow on to that, in that process, are we also like, I guess I haven't seen it necessarily directly done. Is it like if the truck is parked halfway on the road, halfway off and half blocking traffic while doing that? Or that's one of the questions is, does it also affect our traffic flow when we're doing it?
Yep.
Okay.
It's a big truck. Yeah. So we typically, you know, residential streets, we just have our own traffic control. Major street, it's a bigger deal. So we would also, that would be part of the contract we would let to the Vactor company. The company that owns the Vactor truck, because they would have to provide traffic control. They're going to bake it into the price they quote to us. If we say, do this on Village Green Drive or Seattle Road, it's different than doing it in your cul-de-sac or mine.
And that's for cleaning. I do just want to just make sure it's clear that the permit does not require you to clean it per se, that you need to go inspect your catch basins. If it does need to be cleaned, yes, they want you to clean it, but you don't have to go clean all 2600 catch basins. You do have to look at them. So if some cities may approach it as, we went around and looked at all 2600, made a note of which ones need to be cleaned, and then we sent this list to Bravo and they went out and drove to all just the ones that need to be cleaned.
Anything else? Any further questions? I think we've asked a lot of good questions and a lot of good information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stacy. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Nice meeting everyone.
Nice seeing you. Now, am I turning over to Jeff or Michael to talk about the revenue forecast?
We'll turn it over to our finance director, Mr. Jeff Ballantyne. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. Thank you, City Manager. Today is a preliminary discussion of our 2021-2022 estimate of revenue sources as well as our expenditures. We're going to review the funds from 2021 through 2026. But before we get into this, and I'd like to do this in a bit of an informal way, so please stop me if you have any questions as we move through it. I wanted to give the council an update on where we're at on some of our CARES initiatives that we have going on. We have been moving forward with the 200 sanitizer stations. We're getting a final quote now with City Brandon branding on that, and we've now identified exactly where we can store those and create a logistics plan to get those out to our parks and to our businesses. As far as the vouchers go, these are the vouchers to our residents to be used within the city limits with any of our businesses. This is from what I understand from the Department of Commerce, the first time they've heard about this type of initiative. They are very supportive. However, they don't know what the answer is. So they're going to get back to us hopefully no later than tomorrow close of business and let us know if it's something that we can move forward with. If it is not something we can move forward with, then we will create very rapidly a grant program opportunity and present that to council. So it's something that we can get out directly to the businesses. That, again, is if the vouchers are not allowable under the CARES money. And the partition work, the Public Works Group, has done a fantastic job in the city council chambers. If you get a chance to take a look at that, I'm pretty impressed with that. And we're also looking at audio video ads for the council meeting so we can do a hybrid support so we can meet in person, but as well looking for social distancing and increasing public involvement, having a hybrid so we have a kind of a go-to meeting format as well as in person. The Public Works is as well as working on cleaning our air ducts in City Hall North, and then we'll be on Thursday doing City Hall South. So a great job by the Public Works group as well doing that. And we're also looking at event tents, which potentially could be used by businesses to expand their own operations outdoors. So we're looking at getting some pricing on that, and then perhaps reaching out to businesses if it's something that they want to use to, again, increase their capacity to bring in more customers based on social distancing. So I wanted to give the council just a quick update of where we're at, and we'll continue to do that for each one of the council meetings. Again, we're going to start going into this study session, and I want to start the conversation by letting you know that there's been a lot of work going into this, the numbers and the presentation, but there's a lot more work to be done. As you know, we have some turnover. We have a new chief coming on board. We have a new public works director, and those folks will get a chance to really sit down with us and go over these numbers and present back to council. So what you're going to see here today is a lot of work with the marketing, the communications group. They did a great deal of work in their areas, passports as well. Overall, the team has really stepped up. And so I think you're going to see some pretty good numbers, and they should fall fairly close to what I think the final presentation will be to you in early November. Looking at the budget calendar, kind of the highlights that I want you to see is that we're in the study session now. What we will be doing is for the November 3rd study session, we will advertise that so the public knows about it and they can listen to it, because then as we get into November timeframe, we'll have public hearings on November 10th, 24th, and December 1st, and potentially more depending on how the budget conversations go. For each one of these funds, I'm going to talk about it at a very high level and then get into some graphics. And again, we're going to be moving through these funds, so please stop me if you have any questions. I'd be more than happy to take a step back and give you some assumptions that we have been using. As well, I'd recommend that if you have some time and you want to come out over and meet with me and look at line item by line item, I'd be more than happy to sit with each one of you to do so. Looking at the general fund, we're starting off in 2019. These are actual numbers. The 2020, this is what we're trending currently. It's not necessarily the last budget amendment. This is what we're currently trending. And then based on the input that we've received and the trend numbers that I'm looking at, I've trended out 2021 and 2022. I will, and as we go through these slides, you'll see revenues and expenses all the way through 2026. But what you see now, starting with the general fund, is we're assuming that the property tax is flat. We do have a slide on that if the council would like to see it as a backup slide that shows what would happen. So what if scenario, if you add a 1% to the property tax year on year for 6 years, what that would do to the bottom line, essentially to the reserves. I will like to say though that we are regulated by the implicit price deflator. That's come out by the county and it's at 0.6 of 1%. So if we did move forward with a property tax increase, it would be limited by that IPD. But in what you're in the numbers that you're seeing here, the property tax is flat. Sales tax is still greatly influenced by the farm, and you'll see that in the numbers going through 2021. There's about $44 million worth of sales, further sales in that year from the farm specific to it. And then you'll see a 5% increase on the overall sales tax from 2021 versus 2019, and then 2022 versus 2021. So we're showing some moderate growth, trying to get back on our feet. Passport operations, we're assuming that that comes back fully October of 2020. SRO assumes two SROs in May of 2021. Right now, we're basically funded for one SRO. As soon as the school comes back with the students, and they will have two SROs there. And then plan check fees, we're using about a four-year average there. Overall, when we look at benefits, the biggest benefit change is medical under AWC. That is increased by 4% year on year, and that we did get from AWC already. And then the biggest driver, as you look at the general fund for the expense side, and you'll see the detail on this, is with our legal reserves. And this ties back to what the city manager and the city attorney Grant talked about, is that we're hoping some of those one-time fees that we've been experiencing in the years past go away, and we'll actually see a quite substantial decrease on the legal fees. Essentially dropping from a $1.1 million, what's in our budget amendment for 2020, down to about $611,000 in 2022. So what you're seeing in this first slide is that revenue, it does not include the CARES Act grant of $926,000, nor does the expense line. I wanted to keep that out so we can see apples to apples year on year. Yes.
With regard to the farm sales tax revenue, my recollection was when we were looking at the development agreement 2 years ago, they provided a study that projected they're going to be generating $900,000 to $1 million in sales tax revenue off the construction. I'm assuming there's been some construction cost inflation since then. Has their estimate been accurate? Do we have any way of knowing if we're on track with that?
I believe we are. We received some input from the farm as far as what those numbers are, and that's exactly what we used in here for 2021, is given their most current numbers.
And they're projected to be done in 21, so that boost will end at the end of sometime next year.
That's correct, Mayor.
Thank you.
And we reflect those numbers in the sales and use tax, and you'll see that in the following slide as we see some details. But ultimately, when you look at this slide, for me, it shows that the expense line for the 2021 is dropping down versus the 2020 trend. The number one driver of that is the legal fees dropping down. And as far as the trend lines continue to pop up on the revenue side, but then in 2021, but dipping down in 22, that reflects the farm essentially coming out of the mix for 2022. Looking at our revenues as a breakdown, you'll see that 54% of our revenue base for 2021 right now is estimated to be property tax. Again, we're holding that flat with some moderate increase based on the valuation of 0.5%. We've had a little bit of population growth, not a lot. And again, we're trying to take a conservative approach here on the property tax. The sales and use tax we just talked about, overall, it's 11% decrease versus the last biennial, largely driven to the COVID-19. But these numbers also include the farm in this. The permits, licenses, and fees, we're seeing a decrease of about 27%, and that's primarily because of COVID as well. We're seeing a real slowdown there, and we're taking, again, a conservative approach, hoping that in the back half of 2021 and 2022, that starts to pick up. Passport services, we do plan on that coming back and actually picking up some market share, as there are some cities that are now falling out of passport operations. And so we should have more folks looking for those types of services. And as well, based on the conversations that in previous council meetings, we're looking to add capacity for social distancing. But after that social distancing is over, we should have more capacity to further enhance passport services. I would like to tell the council that Jody has done an amazing job. She reached out looking at the TSA opportunity that we spoke about for the CARES Act, and she has received preliminary approval to move forward with that operation. And as well, we would also be able to service TWIC cards, which is essentially an identification card used at the Port of Seattle or at the Naval Base. So we're really looking to expand some operations there. And you'll see those numbers reflected in the passport services, but we think there's probably more there, and we'll be coming back to council with a business case model to show.
Jeff?
Yes.
I have a question. So the sales and use tax decrease, that's driven by the farm, correct?
Mainly the decrease is driven because of COVID. So we've seen a big decrease, roughly about a 70% decrease in sales outside of the farm. The farm has really propped us up very well for the last 2 years, or for this year specifically, and will continue to do so in 2021. And then we have built in here essentially a recovery model. We're basically forecasting for 2021 to be about 95% level of where we were in 2019. And then from there, increase by 5% in 2022 versus 2021. So we're taking a conservative approach on that economic build, hoping that hopefully it comes back a little bit more rapidly.
So so just to make sure I'm correct then, so you're projecting a 5% do you say, decrease up in 19?
So a 5% decrease versus 2019, less the farm, and then we add the farm back on top of it.
And then you add the farm back in on 21.
Yes. So when I'm talking about the assumptions that we're using, if we strip the farm out, essentially what we're tracking to is we assume that we're going to be about 95% of where we were in 2019. And then, as the mayor had pointed out, we anticipate that we're going to probably pick up about another 400,000 or so in farm sales use tax. So that's added on top of it. Then when we go to 2022, the farm goes away in those one-time sales and use tax. And we also are anticipating, hopefully, a 5% gain on the sales and use tax from all other business.
So that was my question. So when I see us down 95% from 1920 to 2122, I know that, you know, there's a fluff of the farm in there, but there's also the negative of COVID in there, and the lack of retail sales. So what you're projecting, bottom line for me, this the answer to my question is in 22, forget the farm, but you are projecting a growth in sales tax, but only a 5% growth. Is that 5% from the depths that it has been at, is that a pretty, that seems pretty safe to me. Am I wrong or
correct? It is. And it's a great question. It is safe. However, I'm trying to track to what we saw from the 2008 recession, 2008-2009. And so I basically am trying to track at a macro level what that growth response was in that recovery period and applying it to our numbers.
So when we got a lift on the retail sales after the 2008 recession, it took a while. The year after, it was like a 5% lift is what you're saying.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jeff, can you go back one slide?
Yes.
So on this slide, looking at your projections, it looks like you're projecting at the end of the year we'll spend a little over 400,000 more than we brought in, so the reserve will drop slightly. On a subsequent slide, I think it's page 19, where you have the general fund reserve, you have the same reserve amount of $7,320,000, but you have an ending reserve balance of $5,320,000. It's slide, I think it's page 19. It's the estimated general fund reserves. You have that figure for 2019 of $7,320,570, but then for 2020, it says $5,728,72, but you show it's just under $6,900,000 here.
I believe that I was probably referring, and I'd have to look at the slide, and I apologize, I don't have the hard copy in front of me, Mayor.
That's fine, just note that. I saw a discrepancy. I want to make sure I'm not, there's something I'm not missing, but it appeared to be a discrepancy there, because we show a slight dip projected for this year in the reserves, but that other slide shows a dip of like 1.3 million.
Okay, the 5.3 sounds, I'm pretty certain that that was the original budget. So once we get to that slide, I'll have to take a look at that. I apologize, Mayor, it's not in front of me right now.
Yeah, that's fine, thanks.
So the central services, the recreational services, as everyone knows, we took a very, very big hit this year due to COVID. So what we're anticipating for next year is, although we will have some slow starts going in there, that we would be fully up on the recreational services. And that includes the preschool PALs, which we most likely recoin and determine what types of certs and what type of capital we need to do to make sure that that revenue actually does come through. So that will be some more conversation that we have over the next month on how these numbers look on the recreational fund. Councilmember Bryles.
Yeah, one of the questions I have is, I see that your assumptions, you're saying we'll have next year, we'll see about 95% of what we saw in 2019. That's a reasonable assumption. I wonder if you base that on something like a specific time range that you expect we may be able to move into phase three and even out of the close downs or the protective measures that we've taken. So I'm wondering if that's part of the assessment or where you're kind of putting that at in these estimates.
It's an excellent question, Councilmember Bryles. What we're assuming in this trend line is we moved to phase three in October of this year. So that certainly is at risk, but that's what our assumption is based on. And then the central services, portion, that's your plan check fees. It's a lot of the permit type of work that we have. We also have in there the SRO numbers. So we're seeing a little bit of an increase there because in the past we only had one SRO. So this is reflecting the incremental of the two SRO, assuming that we're back in the classrooms. The interest rates are also something significant that I'd like to point out. We are at almost historic lows. Right now we're picking up on LGIP 0.25%. So we're hoping to get back up to a 2% or back to the normal that we've seen prior to the COVID pandemic. Looking at the general funds on a year-by-year basis, I thought it'd be nice to show it this way instead of a biennial approach. So this shows each year what we've done. 2019 is actual, what, and 2020 is what we're trending to. And then the 2021 going forward is really what the trend lines are identifying. And again, you can see here in the property tax line, we've kept flat. You can see the moderate growth that we're assuming on the sales and use tax. Again, the farm is greatly helped us in this case. Then as we look at the expenses, I just kind of wanted to get back to the council. We haven't really changed much on what our assumptions are. Payroll related is still about 50% of overall general fund expenses. professional and technical fees is about 48%. But here's the breakdown, and I thought I'd break it down, collapse all the categories into one, and look at it in essentially categories and types of expenses. So you can see, for example, we have payroll expenses. So that shows with our current funding that we have right now as far as our positions. As example, we have three in the city manager group, 11 in finance, that includes passport operations. Communications marketing is 2, information technology is 1. We have 2 in police admin, 7 in support services, 19 in patrol, 4 in community development. We have about 11.8 overall between city streets and public works in totals. So we're running an average of 64.8 FTE in this assumption. And then again, the benefits that we talked about, we're showing the AWC, the medical increases at 4%, although the dental and the other stayed flat in that case. So this, I think this graph, it gives you a really good idea of how we're projecting this out going through 2026 in a fairly conservative way, with the exception of legal. You can see in 2019, we expended about $820,000 roughly. In 2020, we're anticipating, and this is what the current trend is just under $1.7 million. And then we're showing kind of falling back to normalcy of just under $600,000 for 2021. And then it just grows essentially by about 3% year on year thereafter. Professional services also is one that we see that we're going to try to pull back a little bit on from 2019-2020 totals. Director Todd is talking about that quite a bit in the public works, where that's primarily we're seeing a lot of use on the technical services using consultants there. As well, even on the IT, we're going to pull back a bit on our IT support where we can when we hire a new IT manager. The travels and training is pretty much the same. We're at our typical levels for the number of FTE that we have. Utilities, you see some slight increases, just a couple percent each year. Repair and maintenance, we're using the averages from the last 4 years. So if you look at 2021, 2022, we're right around the $134,000 range. The fire services, those are actual numbers through 2022 based on the current contract that we have. And then I put in about a 3% lift year on year thereafter. Jail dispatch emergency, we did fall on a decrease in 2020, and that's primarily because of COVID. We actually, and Councilmember Cavallari could probably talk to this, we actually saw a decrease in the jail numbers for a little while, and now they're starting to come back up. So you're gonna see a return to normalcy there. And there's some capital outlays going back to the normal norms over the last 4 years. IT, we're able to bring that down from the 2020 number because we're starting to relax some of the consultant needs. And again, a lot of this is being driven by some COVID as well. And then this is by department. So same numbers, but now broken down by departments. And if you recall, when we did the budget amendment, we moved the legal fees so we can kind of capture that all into the city manager department. So where that looks like it's jumped up quite a bit in 2020, that's all legal fee related. So again, consistent with what we talked about with legal fees, we start to drop down to a normal level in 2021 with about $822,000. The rest of the departments, as you look at that, are very consistent with what we've seen in the past, and based on those FTEs of 64.8 across the board for each one of those departments. And this is a breakdown, if you look at our departments, on how we're using our expenses. So the police department accounts for 38% of overall expenses for the 2021-2022 biennial, and then fire safety at 29%. Overall, we'll see a decrease of almost 1%.
Hey, and then, Jeff.
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't jump in quick enough. Can you go back a couple slides? We had 1 year where the outlays was only 4,000, is really low compared to usual. I don't think it was this one. It was the one before this, I think.
So there's $4,312 in this slide, if this is what you're looking at.
Yes. Why is it so low compared to all the other years in 2020?
Primarily because of COVID. And you're going to see this in a number of our other funds. There's a lot of projects that we assumed that we were going to be working through for the summertime and into the early fall. And because of COVID, we've not been able to do a number of these. And so you'll see that a lot in our CIP, in our capital improvement funds as well, where we'll have a number of projects that we're not going to see that in the expense side this year. It'll slide to the right into next year.
Okay, that makes perfect. That makes sense. I was just, it was so low. It kind of stood out to me.
Thank you. And there'll be a few of these, unfortunately, we're going to see. So this is the reserves. And again, we have as a backup slide, if the council would like to see it, on the property tax and the what ifs. This is what we're trending to. And I believe this is a mayor where you may have been talking about the 5.7 million.
Yes, this is what I was referring to.
So that 5.7 million, this was what the 2020 budget amendment was supposed to be. So we're trending to be a higher than that. So I believe this was the original budget number that we put in there. So I apologize for the
confusion. Isn't the actual, this is looking at what the budget had gotten. Okay, that explains it.
I apologize for that.
No worries.
But one of the important things to see about this trend line is you can see in 2021 and 2022, we're looking very solid. And we have the 15% threshold the city is looking for, which is roughly about, I believe, 4.7 million. And that's based on the revenue for the biennial, less the beginning balance. So we're well north of that, but you start to see the slope. And this is typical. You see this in the previous budgets and in past years, where it starts to taper off, you know, 3 to 6 years out. So as we're looking out through 2026, you can see that number now kind of coming back to what we actually anticipated for 2022 at that 5.2, 5.3 million.
You know, one thing that you're not going to be able to answer tonight, but it'd be helpful to know is, I remember 2 years ago when we were looking at this, and the same thing 4 years ago, we were looking at this six-year projection that was showing the general fund reserve being depleted quite a bit. And this is a much rosier picture. And so I'd be interested to know what has changed in the last 2 years that may, you know, because if I recall, I don't remember the exact numbers, but 2 years ago, I think it projected over 6 years, we might have been taking the general fund reserve down to under 3 million. So it shows us in 6 years being down a bit, but nowhere near where we were projecting it would be 2 years ago. So I'd be interested to know what has changed to drive this to be a healthier outlook than what we had had in the past.
Yes, Mayor, it's an excellent question. And in fact, it's something that we've talked about before. So this really reflects the current FTE versus what that FTE projection was a few years ago. And I'll break that out in more detail for you, Mayor, but that's one of the biggest drivers of that.
That's a good point, because I think 2 years ago we were over 60 FTEs. Were we closer to 63 or 64?
That's right. And then with the latest, the budget amendment, I think mid-biennial, where we increased the number of headcount as well, really drove that number down in those out years, to your point. So these numbers reflect the current state after the layoffs have occurred as well.
Thank you.
The street fund is one that we have to take very particular attention to, because the street fund is really only generated by, and I'm going to show you right away, the motor fuel tax. That's 85% overall of our revenue base. So we're highly dependent on that, and that's not increasing as quickly as our expense lines are. And again, this overall slide, you can see from 2019 all the way through 2020, we've done pretty well in the 2020 trend, dropping the numbers down and applying resources elsewhere. But as we talked about before, this is due largely in part to COVID. and that we weren't able to do a lot of the projects that we needed to do within the street fund. So we anticipate that that's going to level and start to increase all the way to about $510,000 in 2022. 2019 also in the revenue side included the TIB of $300,000. So we still have to identify what the projects are to support that $300,000 over the next year. And we'll be working with the council and Director Todd on working out what that plan is going to look like. So essentially we're going to see that increase on our expense side to help basically fund that TIB revenue that we've already received. In the 2020 numbers as well, on the expense side, that did include $33,000 for traffic control, as well as $99,000 as capital outlay for equipment. 2021, and what we're looking at right now, shows some of the traffic control that we thought we were going to do in 2020 slide to the right by about $100,000. And again, on the revenue side, we are anticipating the motor and fuel tax rise by 8.9%. And again, that's because of COVID-19. We saw a decrease in 2020 in the fuel tax for those months that we were in phase one. And not a lot of people are worried. We weren't picking up that much in the fuel tax. So that should rebound quite a bit, and we're representing that there. And this is a breakdown year by year on how that's going to look. So you see a gradual increase there. And when you take a look at the expense side, I'm just going to jump ahead, I'll come back. You'll see the expense side kind of moving year by year. And that's really driven by the capital outlays. And those capital outlays that we're projecting right now in 2021 is $100,000. And then every other year thereafter. And I use that as a target point because of this. This is our reserves. So without additional transfers from the general fund, which we do not have in the current budget that you just saw, this is what would happen just every other year, taking $100,000 for capital outlays. And that could be for traffic mitigation or calming, traffic devices, that sort of thing. Or any sort of road work that we have. So we do not have a lot of money in these expense lines. You essentially support that infrastructure. So one thing that you'll probably see in the next review of this budget is what we're going to do essentially to help mitigate this and keep the reserves ample enough and have a capital plan that can support that infrastructure for the street fund. And then going back one slide, this is the current breakdown as we see it as of today for 2021-2022. You can see it's essentially 30% payroll, 20% technical services, and then a lot of it is going to be tied into the capital outlay and then the utilities to keep the lights on in the streets. I'm going to move forward to some of our smaller funds, and what's important here, and again, I'm more than happy to, and you will have all the line item details for this, but the way to look at these slides here for each of these other funds is to look at where we're at on the reserve basis. So right now for the council contingency, we're anticipating that we're not going to have any reserve in the council contingency going into next year. The municipal arts, we anticipate that we're going to end this year with just over $30,000. So this we have in the 2020 expenses, a $25,000 transfer to support historical preservation. But this is something the council may want to think about as far as any other projects that you'd like to see supported in 2021 or 2022. Paths and trails, we anticipate ending this year with about $7,000 in reserves. 2020 also included the trail preservation project. Drug buy, this is primarily funded by seizures. This is expenses for investigation supplies and costs, and we anticipate to end this year with about $9,000. City Hall North, this is again one of those that COVID impacted. We had $440,000 worth of transfers for the roof repair at City Hall North and about $80,000 for the HVAC system. So we have a number of HVAC systems that are either not working at all or very close to not working at all. So we've got a lot of work to do on that building. even more so than what this is representing. So we're anticipating ending this year with a reserve of $160,000, and the expense side about $621,000. I think some of that's going to slide over to the right in 2021. I'll be working with Director Todd to kind of lay out that cash flow prognosis. The debt service, this is really funding two projects right now. It's the new general obligation bond that we have to support the surface water infrastructures, but as well as the 800 megahertz capital project that ends. So as you look at moving into 2021 and 2022, the $264,000 in 2021, the $263,000 in 2022, that's 100% for the general obligation bond. And that's being transferred out from the surface water fund in its entirety. The local revitalization program, we're going to end this year at about $180,000. That's being driven by the property tax. So that's something else that the council may want to think about for this next biennial, any projects that you'd like to see. Our REIT money, this one I'm extremely cautious. Very, very difficult to project this. We've had a fantastic 2019, and even considering what's going on with COVID, I think a very good 2020 with about $1.1 million in revenue. I was trying to take a look at some historical trends and try to guesstimate the best I can with, you know, even some of the COVID response in the REIT and some signs that the real estate may be dropping down, at least in the first quarter of next year. So I try to represent that the best I could in the revenue. So you see that although the revenue is up versus 2020, it is down actually quite a bit versus what we've seen in years past. But again, we also have a lot of change in the construction environment. So this one I'm extremely cautious about. And just for the council, in 2019 through 2020, we had about $1.1 million transfer out of the REIT fund to parks, $3.5 million in road improvement, and $805,000 to CIP. On the CIF, and we talked about this before, a lot of projects were not completed this year. So what I'm representing here is that our reserves are actually going to increase over what we anticipated for 2020 in that trend line. But that'll move over to the beginning balance of 2021, and then you'll see that we're identifying the expenses for the roof and seismic retrofit, ADA, upgrades at City Hall and the library, the Emergency Operations Center, the Public Workshop, the Gateway and Presence Improvement and Historical Preservation Project, all sliding into 2021, and these numbers represent that. It still shows that we're gonna end 2021 very strong at $4.2 million in reserves. And just under 4.1 at the end of 2022. Parks and open space, this one is really largely driven by mitigation. And again, I'm cautious about this projection as well. So I took an extremely conservative approach here. Looking at what we've been seeing lately in the mitigation, you can see I've pulled that down to about 106,000 in 2021 and just about 109,000 in 2022. We'll end the year this year with $921,000 in reserve. The expense that was really driving in 2020, we had $2.2 million in Mill Creek Park land acquisition and also some Heron Park upgrades of about $366,000. Our road improvement fund, again, largely driven by mitigation. I've taken a conservative approach on that. We anticipate then this year with about $4.2 million in reserve. But again, we see a lot, the reason for that high reserve is because of a number of projects that we cannot complete in 2020 that we're going to slide into 2021. That includes the concrete sidewalk repair, pavement preservation and rehabilitation, bridges monitoring, traffic signal, traffic safety and calming efforts. And again, we'll be working with Director Todd and team to further capture other projects that we'd recommend. Our surface water fund is actually a fund that is showing some health, some real health. We, as you know, we had to take a loan out to support the surface water fund from the general fund in years back. And we've also went forward with the rate study and they increased the rates. with the projection that we're going to have to do a lot of the repairs on the pipes and other stormwater related repairs, and it's working. You'll see that we're going to finish up this year with just over $600,000 in the trend line. And what I want to show you is that even though showing that the reserves maintain about $650,000 to $700,000 over 2021-2022, this includes $445,000 stormwater related repairs in 2020, and we're anticipating about $600,000 for the next biennial. This is the revenue forecast year on year, and again, you can see what those rate increases have done over the years, and that's helping support drive our expense side with a lot of capital outlay that we're projecting in 2021-2022 of the $1 million, and also the one-time, just in case, extraordinary repairs and improvements of $400,000. So $1.4 million in total is what we're anticipating that we can support with this growing fund. And you can see in this graphic, which I really like because it shows you what some of those assumptions are year by year. So based on trying to keep an ample amount of reserve, we're able to essentially get about $200,000 set aside for extraordinary repairs and improvements year on year, starting in 2021. And then if you look at the capital outlays, that's where you can see the pipe repairs and improvements there. And so you can see $1 million for the next biennial, but we're also anticipating about 1.3 the next and 1.6 the following biennial. So it really shows good strength in what's going on in this fund. And this is really represented with all the improvements here on how the fund balance even looks after that. So you can see where we're at now, about $602,000. In 2026, we're anticipating, even with $1.6 million in capital outlay and $200,000 extra repairs in 2026, we would still end that at almost $1.2 million in reserves. So we're showing good health in our reserves there. Our equipment replacement fund is doing extremely well. We're going to end the year at about $1.6 million for 2020. And again, we have some COVID-related expenses that will most likely slip over into 2021 for streets equipment primarily. The unemployment self-insurance fund, we actually still have some money in that. And that's a good thing because we're anticipating picking up about $20,000 in some of the unemployment claims that we have. And I anticipate that'll increase a little bit. So, but I feel like we have enough coverage in that fund right now. So that was a very high level kind of capture of where we're at with the preliminary numbers. And what I would recommend, I'm going to go into this slide real quick just so you can see it. What I recommend is if the council can continue what you're doing and working with your constituents and in each other and looking at different ways that different projects that you would like to see, this kind of gives you a little bit of a framework of where we're at now. And as we had talked about before, this is a backup slide. This is the property tax. And we did, again, keep the property tax flat, but we wanted to show this to represent where we're at and what the fund balance would look like if we did take a 1% or if we didn't take a 1%. So again, that 2020 number represents what the current budget amendment number shows. And so it's not the higher of the two numbers, so that's not the trend number. So just using that as a basis, and you can see that if you go out to 2026, the difference is about $800,000 between the fund balance of 2026 versus if we did take a 1% property levy tax. The orange line is our minimum percent, so that's the 15%. So as we kind of talked about before, at 2022, we're anticipating that we need to have at least $4.5 million, and we're going to be about $7 million in the reserve if we use the current preliminary general fund expense and revenue numbers. So with that, I open it up to any kind of questions or comments.
Mayor, if I might, just when we talk about this as a preliminary picture, the elephant in the room, and really the thing that we really need to engage our city council as policymaking body is what are the impacts as we head into the fall here? We are really trying to monitor the data as closely as we can. The key caution here is that all of these numbers and all of these assumptions still presume that there will not be a second wave of this virus in the fall. As we continue to monitor this, some of our forecasting tools are as good as anyone else's. So this is something that we will keep coming back to repeatedly with council, is where our comfort level is in terms of the range of potential risk and liability going forward as it relates to economic impacts. Not so much from what we have already budgeted for and the ways in which we have pumped the brakes on our spending, which accounts for the bump in the reserves that we currently see, but where we want to land in terms of the data that we all pay attention to out there in terms of the economic fallout. That's step one. Step two is if we have another wave in the fall, many of the assumptions go out the window in terms of how we plan for revenue and other forecasting. So we are here to represent this as a forecast, but not a certainty in terms of where.
Muted, Michael.
Where we at going forward? That's all I wanted to add before we begin the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Councilmember Bryles.
Yeah, I had a question on that last slide we looked at just there. You said the 1% increase on property tax. Now, is that the two different curves were no increase and a 1% increase each year, or just the first year?
That's a great question. I apologize. It's a 1% increase each year, year on year, versus no increase across the 2006.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, for the 6 years.
Councilmember Steckler.
Well, Jeff, you did it again. I followed everything. I'm actually incredibly surprised, but now I understand the numbers. And I'm going to assume that for today's discussion, we're just talking about numbers and not anything about issues and stuff. We'll talk about that at a later date. This is all about just clarifying the numbers that you presented. So I had like three issues I wanted to bring up. One, I noticed the HVAC cost at City Hall North. Any chance that that could be covered by the CARES money, since it is due to making it a cleaner air environment?
Unfortunately, no, because we had it already in our budget. So that's okay. One of the stipulations.
Thanks for that one. On the Heron Park, you mentioned the cost of $366,000. Is that the net cost after the $250,000 grant, or was that before the grant?
That was before the grant.
Oh, okay, good. So it'd be an actual net cost lower than that because of the grant that we got, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. And then I have to do this because I'm going to channel Mike Todd and bring up a typo for the, just because, oh, look at him pop his little head in. He's so happy that somebody's bringing up a typo. But I believe REIT is misspelled. It's REIT, not REET, Real Estate Investment Trust.
No, it's Real Estate Excise Tax. Real Estate Excise Tax, not Investment Trust.
Well, this is the real estate excise tax, not the real estate investment trust, the tax.
Real estate investment trust isn't a tax. That's a vehicle for owning
property.
The excise tax is the tax on the sale of a real property.
So I beg to differ. It is not misspelled. I thought it was REIT. Great.
It is correct, although I did notice there was a pubic instead of a public somewhere in one of the documents.
Oh, no.
You bring that one up. Thank you, Mayor.
I would point that out, but there was.
I leave that to you to bring that one up.
Does anyone else have any other questions, comments? I just wanted to thank Jeff and Michael. I really appreciate the clarity that you present this information. I think it's really helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Nothing further, thank you. And let's move on to the approval of the sale of the 2014 Interceptor.
Yep, the last time we obtained council's approval, we went to auction and actually performed fairly well. We've come back. I am in the city manager report going to explain some personnel changes in the police department. Presenting tonight is our new acting police chief, Robert Phillips.
Thank you,
a little bit more later on tonight. Chief Phillips?
Yes, sir. Thank you, city manager. Thank you, mayor. So under this resolution, which you guys have seen before, just in compliance with the municipal code 3.44.030, looking to seek your approval to formally decommission and sell Car 39, which is the 2014 Ford Police Interceptor sedan, by live auction. I know this council is well informed and has previously been briefed on the state of the fleet, probably more so than most councils. You guys have a tremendous amount of historical perspective. And then I know that in March, you also sat through the recent decommissioning of Police Car 31, which was the Tahoe, which was referenced by the city manager. If it in any way benefits the council, I can recap the vehicle history and then answer any questions you guys might have, and then move forward.
Did anyone on the council have any questions on what has been presented? Councilmember Bond, are you saying something?
Sell it.
Well, it takes one of you to make a motion. Motion to approve resolution 22590 is the motion that needs to be made.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, unmute and please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Anyone abstain? That would be 6-0. Thank you. Now we're moving on to proposed new initiatives. This is the matter that Councilmember Cavallari brought forward a couple weeks ago. We agreed to have it deferred until this week due to the length of our last regular meeting. So I'm going to turn it over to Councilmember Cavallari to introduce his proposal.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, the resolution you have before you was born essentially from some what can only be described as some despicable or heinous acts towards law enforcement in recent days. The shooting at the patrol car and the two deputies inside an LA County, the firebombing of a Seattle building with officers inside, and many other acts have kind of spawned this resolution. And they're being discussed in councils, and our county just approved one as of late. Resolution 2020591 kind of gets us there. It shows our constituency our concerns, and also reiterates our trust and affirmation in our police department as it stands now. It's good, solid language. I think it's fair. Mayor Holzclaw and I went back and forth several times just kind of cleaning it up. I'd like you to support it. I think our folks are nervous about this. The defund the police rhetoric has been back and forth, and folks are nervous. I think we've all received the texts, the emails, and whatnot. So I would urge you to support 2020-591. And I'll entertain questions if you want.
Floor is open for discussion.
Has everyone had a chance to read it?
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you, Mayor. So I've said before, I think one of the best qualities about Mill Creek people. We celebrate our town center. It's wonderful. It's fun. But I've repeatedly said, I think it's our police department and the service they provide, the safe community. The people don't move to Mill Creek because we've got a view of Puget Sound or some of the things that some of the other cities around us enjoy. But we do have a very good quality of life, and it's because of our police department. Because of my, I started as a police officer in the city of Mill Creek, and I serve as a police officer now for the sheriff's office. I tend not to be very vocal and supportive of, because I feel like it sounds a little self-serving perhaps. But the other side of it is, if we as a council body don't let these folks know, I think I've kind of made a mistake in the past of assuming that the Mill Creek officers know that I support them. And that's kind of a mistake, similar to maybe, you know, assuming your wife knows you love her or whatever. You know, you sometimes you just need to step up and tell them you care. And so I like this as a way of reassuring the Mill Creek officers that we do support them, we value the work they're doing, and we appreciate what they do for us every day.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councilmember Cavallari, for bringing this resolution to us so we can have this wonderful opportunity tonight to support our officers. I do take this resolution extremely serious. I actually spent quite a bit of time in discussion with Acting Chief Eastman right before he left, and also even more time speaking to Acting Chief Phillips. And I really appreciate the insight into our police department that they both provided to me. And, you know, I don't know, some of the wonderful insights that came out, I'm not sure that everyone in the public realizes that the mission of our police department is that they is to promote a strong and safe community by providing an unrelenting, compassionate approach to law enforcement. And they have been striving extremely hard to be out there and make sure that the people who are wanting to have peaceful to actually peacefully protest and exercise their rights, that they have been out there and they have been encouraging them and supporting them and keeping them safe as well. And with that, I do want to support this motion. I just had a couple things that I was hoping we could discuss, maybe just softening. I would be a little more comfortable if we could just say in the second whereas, if we could just say for municipalities, if we could just end it at the law enforcement instead of bringing up promoting racial justice. I know I haven't had anyone in Mill Creek contact me and ask me to cut the budget of our police department. Everyone has been extremely supportive, and everyone that's been protesting has been peaceful. And so I don't see any reason for us to actually, you know, add that language in there. And then at the very end, I would feel better if we did not bring up that, add in there a jab that we're not to not compromise the safety of our community, because I felt like we were kind of not necessarily providing that uplifting tone that our police department is striving to have with the protesters. And I think that what we say with our budget and backing our police officers actually does what the spirit of what you're trying to say in the actual resolution. So how do you feel about that?
So the racial justice.
Councilmember Cavallari, before you respond, I think I'm going to channel former Councilmember Todd and ask that let's put a motion on the table and actually get something in front of us that we can then discuss and debate the language. Make a motion to modify so we follow appropriate procedure. If anyone wants to make general comments, if none, then let's make a motion and get a second, and then we can start talking about the language.
So then, Mayor, if you will, I would move to make a motion 2020, resolution 2020-591 to approve.
Second.
Okay, now that the motion's on the table, Mayor Pro Tem, are you proposing some amendments to the language?
Yes, the only amendments I was proposing to the language is just that at the end that we just stop at, in the second whereas, that we stop at to cut the budgets of law enforcement and just end there. And then I was proposing that at the very end, we just end at the police, I will make public safety a top priority in the 2021-2022 biennium budget and end there. Those were my proposals.
So I don't disagree with the what is it, the second paragraph, second sentence you're talking about, where it adds racial justice. That piece of the sentence, that construction came from the county's actual language that was approved by unanimous vote. And I think maybe you might be misinterpreting it. It is for the latter, to promote racial justice, was my understanding. So, and I'm okay with striking it. I have no problem. I think that's probably an easy fix. I think it, there's kind of a harmony or a symmetry to it with that in there. And the last sentence, I would respectfully say it should stay as is. I think it's pretty benign and says exactly what it's supposed to say. I would be fine with ending the second whereas as requested by the council member and agreed to by the draftee, or whatever proper term is. I'd like the last paragraph to remain the same.
Okay. I do agree with the Mayor Pro Tem on the second paragraph. I do think it sends a confusing message, so I think we all agree that's a good one to cut. I don't know. I do feel maybe I just don't understand why we need to keep in "will not compromise the safety of our community." I mean, I think we say that when we say we'll make safety a top priority, and in our budget, because I do agree with that. I want to support the police. I don't want to cut budgets. Maybe I just don't understand why. Maybe somebody could help me to understand why that should stay in. "Will not compromise the safety of our community."
Well, personally, I think it's pretty straightforward. Compromising the community's safety for, let's say, political reasons. It's no different than what spawned the defund the police or reimagine the police rhetoric. The fact that we won't compromise, I mean, it's to me, I don't get it. Honestly, it's pretty straightforward. I don't really see the issue here, honestly.
Let's go back and make sure we got our I's dotted and our T's crossed. Councilmember or Mayor Pro Tem, let's take your changes separately so we can make sure we have a clear record for what we're changing. So your first change, you were making a motion to amend the second whereas to end the language.
To strike racial justice.
Okay.
To end it in law enforcement, period.
Okay. And okay, so that's your motion to amend the motion to make that change.
Yes. Okay,
is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Okay, let's discuss any further discussion on that motion to amend the second whereas. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to amend the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion, the First Amendment passes. So it's the resolution. What's before us now is the resolution as with the amendment to the second whereas. So did you want to make a separate motion for another change, Mayor Pro Tem?
Sure. I'd like to make a motion that we change the final "be it resolved" statement to actually end at "police officers and will take public safety a top priority in biennium budget," period.
I'll second that.
Okay, any discussion on that second amendment? Councilmember Blonde, it looks like you're itching to say something.
Could you just explain why you think that needs to be taken up?
Sure. I feel that when we're trying to take an uplifting tone and our officers have been out striving to make sure that the public knows that they're listening to them and that they want to hear them, and they're trying to build these relationships with the peaceful protesters, that I feel like this can be taken as kind of a jab at those people that are having those feelings and talking about them, that we're kind of jabbing them that they're not right and that they are jeopardizing our safety with their feelings. So I was just trying to make sure that we kind of stayed out of any misconception, but I guess maybe misreading of it, that we meant something that I don't think anyone on the council means.
Councilmember Cavallari, then Councilmember Bond.
Thanks, Mayor. I'm a pretty practical guy, and I don't see any jabs being whatsoever. Matter of fact, the language came directly from, and I think I forwarded the email to Mayor Holzclaw. It came from a citizen's email, I believe, who wanted me to make sure that we're not going to compromise law enforcement or public safety. So I don't see how I don't get it. I don't think it's a jab. I don't see it. So I'll just respectfully disagree.
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you, Mayor. Peacefully protesting is a lawful act. It's allowed by Mill Creek Police. It's, as has been demonstrated, not only did we allow it because it's lawful and we wouldn't stand in the way of any citizen acting lawfully. We provided for their safety while they've got their message out. So there's no reason for anybody acting lawfully in the city of Mill Creek, abiding by the laws of the state of Washington, Snohomish County, to have any concern, to feel any threatened by that. That comment protects them. It only people throwing firebombs and busting windows and trying to kill people would have a problem with that, I think.
Councilmember Bryles.
My only point about it is actually I just think it's kind of redundant. We support our police officers is a statement, and then we'll make public safety a top priority in the budget is a statement. And I feel like we'll not compromise the safety of our community is just kind of saying the same thing again. That's the thing I see about it. I don't necessarily see it as an ill or a positive in here. I see it as purely redundant, but that's the way it is and the way that I read it. And I mean, if part of the wording can be seen as inflammatory, then I'd rather not if it doesn't add anything to the resolution.
Well, it addressed it as a citizen.
Yeah, Councilmember Steckler, and then I have a quick comment.
I just wanted to offer two thoughts on this. The only reason I seconded him or considering this is it's such a positive thing that we're saying about the police. We do support them. I agree with that. I think Councilmember Bond said it really well. How many times do we really send a message out to our police force how much we appreciate them? Everything he said, I totally agree with. I want to do this. I appreciate this. I appreciate Councilmember Cavallari bringing this to our attention. And it's such a positive and good thing. It does seem like a little bit of a negative and will not compromise the safety of our citizens isn't really needed in it. It's such a positive if you do take it out. It almost could be interpreted by some people as a political statement. And we don't want to be political in this. We just want to be supportive of our police. And that's the only reason I'm even considering taking it out. But by the same token, I do want to say I respect the two council members' opinions and I do intently support our police department. So this is not something I'm going to fall on a sword on, Bob, for anybody. I only mean it as a suggestion to make it better. I definitely do not need to. This is not the end of the world for me to take this thing out. I just wanted to bring it up as something I think would make it even more positive than it already is. And that's why I brought it up.
I guess my quick two cents is I think we're splitting hairs a bit here. I'm not sure I see the potential inferences drawn from it. I see the point that we're inserting a not into what is otherwise a public state or positive statement. I think we all agree that none of us are intending with this to take any kind of jab. With that said, I guess, Councilmember Cavallari, is there any wording that you think we could reverse the tense that if we'll not compromise, we'll promote the safety of our community? Make it non-negative and make it a positive statement? I'm just throwing it out there. I see it's redundant, but it doesn't bother me that it's redundant.
And I get it. I get that maybe some others have some different thoughts on it. That's not the intent behind it. That's not the meaning behind it. The language is, for the most part, generic in these types of resolutions. I think it's essentially a cut and paste from what the county did. So if they can get their bipartisan with this language, I don't see why we can't. I don't think it's political. I don't think it's inflammatory. Like I said, we have the attorney right here, Grant. We can actually ask him, but I've never really seen us dissect resolutions this deeply on what is really benign language. Like I said, that's it. I'm done.
Does anyone else want to? Everyone's had a chance to comment. One final opportunity. I think Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem.
I think Councilmember Cavallari just shot down your idea, but in case he's still pondering, I actually think it could be very uplifting and get the same point across if we were to actually use the police department's own mission there, and if we were to change that and say to promote a strong and safe community, which is the wording they have in their mission statement. Instead of saying we'll not compromise, if we just say that we will strive to promote a strong and safe community.
I could get behind that.
Let's take this one in turn. So the motion that's on the table, before we get to another motion for a different change, the motion that's on the table is to amend the now therefore paragraph so that it ends at budget. So let's take a vote whether before we entertain a motion for a different change, we need to see if there's approval for this motion. So does everyone understand the motion, the change that's in the motion before us right now? Okay, so all those in favor of the change, say aye. All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Nay. Mayor Pro Tem, are you voting for or against? Your hand went up.
Oh, I did vote for it still, so.
Okay, so that was 1-5, so the motion is defeated. So is there a motion for a different change to that paragraph that would like to be put on the table?
Yes, I would like to make a motion to change the paragraph so that it reads, so let's see, in the 2021-22 biennium budget, and we will promote a strong and safe community.
So it would replace from will to the end of the sentence and replace it with promote a strong community, safe community.
Strong and safe community.
Promote a strong and safe community. That is the that's your motion, Mayor Pro Tem?
Yes.
Second.
Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? That would be 5-1. So now we are back to the motion as amended. So it is proposed resolution 2020-591, which is second whereas amended to end at enforcement, and with the now therefore paragraph amended so that it ends and will promote a strong and safe community. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Resolution as amended passes 6-0. Thank you for the discussion, everyone. Okay, I only have one item for my report tonight. We need to have a brief discussion on if anyone's interested in filling Director Todd's former seat on the as a mid-sized city representative on the community transit board. So the meeting to select that position is going to be held on October 19th. We need to notify community transit by the 12th, so Monday prior to our next meeting, of if anyone's interested, who that person is. And so I know Mayor Pro Tem is interested, but throwing it on the table, is anyone else interested taking on the opportunity to be selected for that role? The mid-sized cities, and Mike might know it better than me, it's Montlake Terrace, Mill Creek, I lose track of all the Arlington, I think Marysville, and there's one or two others, but I'm forgetting what they are.
Excuse
Monroe, Mecklenburg.
I would be interested, but I could be dissuaded if it's something really important to Mayor Pro Tem, but it sounds like something very interesting that I'd like to look into.
Time out. We need to extend the motion. I'd suggest we extend it to 9 o'clock, although I don't think we'll take that long.
Second.
Who made the motion? I can't make the
motion. Motion to extend the meeting to 9 o'clock.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem and seconded by Councilmember Bryles. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So extended. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. I forget, was my was someone asking a question? Or oh no, Councilmember Steckler, are you deferring to Mayor Pro Tem if she's interested?
I'll defer if that's, but it's something I would be interested in if she changes her mind.
Okay, then we will coordinate accordingly for the Mayor Pro Tem to participate in that meeting. And Michael, if you could work with Naomi on providing whatever notice we need to provide to community transit that Mayor Pro Tem will be attending that meeting on the 19th to advocate for herself for that position. I figure she can do it better than I could.
We will, Mayor.
Thank you. So with that, let's go around the horn with our reports. Councilmember Bond, any report?
I just want to say thanks to Councilmember Cavallari for bringing that motion forward. I think it's an interesting time, a challenging time for the law enforcement community, and letting our Mill Creek officers know that we support them is a good thing. So thanks for bringing that forward, and thanks to the council for helping us get it through.
Council Member Steckler, any report?
I have a very quick one. I'm very pleased and happy to announce that, you know, in the midst of all this COVID chaos, we've had to cancel so many events. We are moving ahead with the city-sponsored annual Shredded event that's going to be happening on October 24th. We've been doing this for the last few years, and the attendance has grown dramatically. I know we've got quite a few of the media on the call with us, but we have all sent out the press releases. But on October 24th, the City of Mill Creek and People's Bank of Mill Creek are sponsoring a recycling event from 11 to 2, free recycling of a free box of a paper of your valuables, your documents, and additional boxes can be recycled as well. It will be staffed by 5 and only 5 members of the Kiwanis Club of Mill Creek, who will be doing all the work and keeping within phase 2 guidelines. But the good news is we get to go ahead and make this happen for the citizens. So I'm really happy this is moving ahead, and I thank the city and I thank People's Bank.
Councilmember Cavallari.
No report, Mayor.
Councilmember Bryles, any report tonight?
Just glad to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you. And Michael, before I get onto your reports, I'm off my game tonight. I jumped over the consent agenda.
I had a report.
I'm sorry. I'm totally off my game tonight. Mayor Pro Tem, I apologize.
That's okay. I would like to start off too by thanking Councilmember Cavallari for bringing the resolution before us. It gave me an excellent opportunity to reach out to our police officers and spend time with them and have some really good discussions on the wonderful job they're doing. So thank you. I also wanted to bring up, I've already reached out to Jeff regarding this, so he's aware, but I participated in our HART meeting last week. I think my weeks are blurring together. And one of the things that came up was that we have voted as a council that we were going to participate in that, in the tax incentive for 1406. But we have not actually had the discussion and voted as a council on what we were going to do with that banking. I know one of the things we discussed was maybe giving it to AHA or things like that so that they could pull the money and they could do something for affordable housing. So we are still going to need to have that discussion, and that came up. Also, I went to the Chamber networking event this Friday. I try to go most weeks to check in with them. And just want to, you know, make sure we have a shout out for Arena Sports. You know, they were, Lee was there, and they're starting to open back up with being able to have limited group, you know, amounts of people together. And they really could use our support. So if everybody can just spread the word that they're open and send them some business, I'm sure they would greatly appreciate it. And I think that's it.
Mayor Pro Tem, for the next HART meeting, I had brought up at one of the meetings when the committee was started to ask them to put together a range of options that small cities like ours that have a small amount of money could contribute towards affordable housing, because a lot of us didn't know what the options are. So you might bring that up with Summer's staff. I'm not sure they ever followed through with identifying so that small cities can see a list of what the options are, so we have a better, make a more informed decision.
Perfect. Thank you.
So now that I've concluded the reports, before we jump to Michael, can we go back to the consent agenda? I just wanted to call to your attention, we made a correction to the times that our executive session ended and the regular meeting ended. So there is a corrected set of minutes that were updated this afternoon. So we would entertain a motion for approval of the consent agenda.
Motion to approve the consent agenda. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Consent agenda is approved 6-0. Now back to Michael.
Thank you, Mayor and members of council. When I left, requested the council authorize an extension of city manager proclamation of emergency, authorized it through October 6th. That authorization expires today. And what I would ask for council is to renew and authorize to extend the proclamation of emergency to November 3rd, 2020. Which is consistent with the state legislature and Governor Inslee in phase two.
Motion to extend the emergency proclamation to November 3rd.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. 6-0.
Thank you, Mayor. Before we present information on the police department awards, I'm going to be asking for Acting Chief Robert Phillips to do so. I just wanted to publicly announce what will be a part of a press release that we'll be working with our communications department to put out tomorrow, and that is that the city of Mill Creek has made its preliminary hiring decision for the next chief of police and director of public safety. The chosen candidate is presently in the process of completing pre-employment background screening, which is extensive, and other testing required for the position. The city chose from a pool of three finalist candidates, one of which was our very own interim chief, Scott Eastman. As many of you know, Chief Eastman stepped into the role of acting chief when former police chief Greg Elwin was placed on administrative leave in late January 2020. Since that time, Chief Eastman has admirably led the city's police department. However, Chief Eastman was not the final candidate to be selected for the position. And during the most recent budget amendment, Chief Eastman's former position of deputy chief was removed from the city's biennial budget. For this reason, the city's selection of a different candidate for the permanent position of police chief effectively resulted in Chief Eastman's layoff. The city and Chief Eastman entered into a mutually agreed upon separation agreement under which Chief Eastman is receiving a severance payment to help him in the transition to new employment. The city is grateful to Chief Eastman for his service, particularly during the challenging times created by the COVID-19 pandemic. I have since appointed as the acting chief of the police department, Sergeant Robert Phillips to act in that role of police chief. I also asked acting chief Phillips to update the council on police department awards. We are not going to take up too much of council's time, but we believe it's important, just building on Councilman Bond's remarks earlier this evening, that we need to be more explicit in recognizing the significant accomplishments and efforts that our public safety forces make in the city. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Chief Phillips if you could tell us about the awards, and we're going to start and speak the most about the Larry F. Davis Award before we announce a list of awards that were earned and received. Chief Phillips?
Yes, thank you, City Manager. And I do appreciate the opportunity to discuss the excellent work that's done by the police officers. And this is for the calendar year 2019. Historically, this sort of thing is done in a large group format, and family members are brought on, and we recognize all of the work all the way from firearms leading up to probably the two most significant awards, that being the Larry F. Davis Award and Officer of the Year Award. And just due to time constraints, I think I'd like to focus, like City Manager said, on the Larry F. Davis Award and probably the Officer of the Year Award. And with everyone deserves to be recognized, but we'll go through the other ones a little quicker. The significance of the Larry F. Davis Award is in recognizing wisdom, judgment, leadership, compassion, and kindness. And it's an award based on a former employee of the City of Mill Creek, Sergeant Larry Davis, who served 15 years of his 31 years in law enforcement at the City of Mill Creek. He was a dedicated and caring police officer, and his impressive knowledge of the law, the wisdom of his years, and the compassion of his soul, the kindness of his judgment, and the kindness of his heart served him well in his role as a police officer and later as a police sergeant. Larry's role was a role model and a friend to his fellow police officers, a staff member, and to the community of Mill Creek. His values were beyond reproach, but never did he force his values on others. Instead, Sergeant Davis led by example. Sergeant Davis passed away in November 2005, and to carry on his memory, his values, and his legacy, the Mill Creek Police Department honors one police officer a year, or a department employee rather, each year who demonstrates the traits of wisdom, judgment, leadership, compassion, and or kindness as they apply to the job of law enforcement or as is appropriate for another staff member. And the 2019 Larry F. Davis Award was presented to Corporal Ian Durkee. If permitted, I'd like to read some of the comments. The comments that are provided were given or submitted on behalf of Ian by his peers. And some of those comments were, Ian goes out of his way to treat all citizens with respect and takes the utmost care in making sure he's providing the best service possible. Ian has taken an incredibly active role in trying to better the department. He has headed multiple efforts to make or improve programs to the police department to include the canine, the bike program, and the Citizens Police Academy. As a corporal, Ian is constantly looking for ways to improve all aspects of our job and is an active leader of the supervisor's cadre. And there's several more notations there from his peers, and Ian is well deserving of that award. The next one would be the Officer of the Year Award. The Officer of the Year is chosen from among commissioned staff by all employees of the Mill Creek Police Department. The officers selected for the award should demonstrate a strong commitment to the department and the community, have a professional attitude and strong work ethic, exhibit high standards of competence and professionalism, contribute to the overall health of the agency by offering positive, constructive solutions to difficult or complex situations, be committed to the principles of community-oriented policing, regularly demonstrate acts of courtesy, kindness, understanding, compassion, courage, and or devotion to duty. The 2019 Officer of the Year Award was presented to Officer Nathan Lerma. And then those that submitted Officer Nathan Lerma for that award commented as following. Nate is one of our most visible members of the department. He is a canine handler, and Nate represents us to the public and to other agencies as he works while taking on the most challenging, high liability, and dangerous tasks in our department. Through all of the challenges of last year, Nate has worked extremely hard and dedicated himself to his work. He is both a credit to our department as well as to our canine program. So again, very well deserved. So I'll jump backwards in an attempt to acknowledge some of the excellent work done by police officers. So for firearms accomplishments, we break that down into expert marksmanship and to master marksmanship. In order to achieve an expert marksmanship ribbon, you have to achieve a 90 to 95% accuracy in our department qualifications to include pistol, rifle, and low light conditions. Those that received the expert marksman were Sergeant Sean Connor, Corporal Ian Durkee, Officer Toby Eikenberry, Sergeant Rod Fleming, Officer Jesse Mack, Officer Josh Saga, Corporal Brett Thompson. And then for master marksman, you had to achieve an accuracy of 96 to 100% in those same qualifications. Those that were successful and awarded the master marksmanship were Sergeant Bart Fouch, Officer Tyrone Hughes, Officer Tyler Kidwell, Officer Nathan Lerma, Sergeant Robert Phillips, and Officer Steve Smith. Sorry, and Detective Christine White, as well as Detective Sergeant Stan White. And then with that, those that achieve a Master Marksmanship Award can receive the Top Shot Award. This year's Top Shot scored a cumulative score of 98.97% accuracy, and that was awarded to Officer Steve Smith. Let's see. My apologies here, I'm scrolling through. Next, we have milestone awards. Milestone awards are years of outstanding dedicated service and commitment to the contribution of the city. And so this year, our milestones were for 5 years, we had Corporal Brett Thompson, 10 years, Corporal Tyler Kidwell, another 10 years, Officer Rory Mundweiler, 10 years, Officer Tyrone Hughes, and then 35 years, one of our records technician, Becky Hookland. But Department Achievement Medals, recognizing innovation and creativity within the department. We had recognized the traffic unit as a whole. So Detective Sergeant Stan White, Detective Chris White, and Officer Tony Bittinger, they received it for their dedicated efforts in establishing Mill Creek Police Department's traffic safety unit. Sergeant Stan White, Detective Chris White, and Officer Tony Bittinger are hereby awarded the Mill Creek Police Department Achievement Medal. Since its establishment, the Mill Creek Police Department's traffic safety unit has continued to provide an invaluable service to the community by enhancing safety to public roads in and around City Mill Creek. For the canine program, Corporal Durkee was awarded the same award for his dedicated actions and personal sacrifices made in the establishment of the Mill Creek Police Department canine service dog program. Corporal Ian Durkee has also been awarded the Department Achievement Medal. And that is it.
Thank you, Chief. It's too bad that we don't get to properly recognize everyone in person, but please convey that we appreciate all that the officers are doing on our behalf. So thank you. And I guess GoToMeeting doesn't have the virtual clap sign that we could all click our clap button. We need to switch to Zoom, I guess, to make that happen. So, but thank you. Michael, is there another item on your report?
Yes, there is, Mayor. Just very briefly, I am signing an agreement with Snow 911 for a site lease agreement at City Hall North. It's a kind of a win-win situation for us. We have for a very, very long time, I am informed, for well over a decade had a problem with radio receptivity within the Mill Creek Police Department. We are working with Snow 911 to locate an antenna at our City Hall North building that will not only possibly be able to address the problem that has been long outstanding within the department with our radio communications equipment, but we'll also we aim to improve communications in the area with the two-way radio. So in exchange for their being allowed to locate on that site, we may not, and we're saying this cautiously, but we may not be required to invest in additional equipment. If after the installation of this equipment there still is a problem, we are looking to once and for all remedy a long outstanding, often promised fix to the communications problem. I believe that Jeff may also have some additional details as it relates to this lease agreement, but looking to dedicate a limited amount of space. Jeff, I don't quite have the dimensions in my notes here. And where are they looking to locate it in the lease agreement?
Thank you, City Manager. So it's a small location, City Hall North, the wall closest to the current PD. There'll be an antenna array on the outside of the building up top. There'll be a small server room, a little area where SNOCO 911 would conduct operations. The Snow 911 will provide all capital according to the ILA in exchange for essentially a limited amount of rent for that area. If that area, if there's ever a sublet opportunity, the city would have full negotiation authority and ability to collect revenue from that if there's that opportunity to do so down the road. All further upgrades to the equipment would be solely handled by Snow 911.
And what I wanted to add is it's my understanding, Grant and Jeff, that although we don't need council approval on this, what I do want to continue to do is be as transparent as we can as to what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so that's the reason why I've included this in the report for this evening. We're hoping that this is going to address, again, this long outstanding two-way radio communication issue. If it doesn't, we will continue to work to improve. The secondary matter that we will be bringing forth in a future presentation is a new amendment to the administrative code that I believe was lobbied for by the fire department in our capital. The administrative code is going to require radio receptivity in all enclosures, and I'm expecting that there's going to be a progressive enforcement schedule, expecting local municipalities to ensure that the fire department radio communication and, as a secondary benefit, police department radio communication will be effective in all public buildings. It's my understanding right now that, for example, the high school and possibly the middle school have proven to not have two-way radio receptivity and communication capability throughout the buildings. And this is something that obviously is important to all of us, but it also extends also to some of our apartment buildings as well. So as we have made this a priority for our next significant unit of work to support our safety forces, we are going to be looking at this administrative code provision, as it would also relate to all of our HOAs in the community as well. So stay tuned on this information as we proceed into the fall and the winter calendar. And with that, I'll conclude my report. The planning calendar for October 13th is right now dedicated to a study session presentation for the proposed capital improvement plan for the 2021 through 2026. There may be some additional matters that are required to be added, but at this point, that's what we have presently staged at this time. And thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Council.
Benjamin, did you have a question, comment?
I had one last item on that, on the calendar that I'd seen, I noted the special meeting listed for the 29th of September as special meeting in the calendar. While we bring up a special council meeting for council position number 6, vacancy interviews and appointment on October 20th, it's not noted on the visual calendar there that there is a meeting on the 20th. And I would assume it would be written as special meeting there under agenda item number K.
Yeah, that's correct. I think the calendar that's copied on there is just notes the regular meetings on the first, second, and fourth Tuesdays of the month. So, but you're correct. The meeting on the 20th will be a special meeting.
Okay,
we are at 6 minutes to go, unless we have to extend the meeting. We're at audience communication. If anyone wants to speak to the council. Mr. Siegel, name and address, and then 3 minutes.
Hi, Sid Siegel. Address is 1701 144th Place Southeast in Mill Creek. Thank you, Mayor and Council. I just had two quick topics to cover real quick, and Naomi, wave me off if I go too long. The first topic is with regards to the legal costs, especially where personnel issues are concerned. I've got 30 years of work experience in private sector, and as part of my responsibilities, the hiring, team development, and on rare occasion, firing employees. And doing this efficiently and especially cost effectively can't be done without a strong human resources function. It's my understanding the city has not recently had a strong independent HR function. And in my experience, and I speak not only as a manager of people, but also one lucky enough to be married to a senior HR director, that the HR function typically takes on about probably 80 or 90% of the issues that I've heard described that our legal counsel has had to deal with in recent years. HR conducts investigations, educates managers on proper process and procedure for handling personnel issues. They offer problem resolution between employees, and managers, among other things. And when I saw the budget projection for the future to fund what looked like at best a skeleton HR function, I see a city potentially setting itself up for continuing the same type of problems that they've had in the last couple of years, and that is the lack of a good resource for managers and employees to handle and resolve issues professionally before they get to the point of litigation and massive legal expense to the city. So in this time where the city manager and the council have the opportunity to continue to rebuild a great staff at City Hall, I think they need to really reconsider their commitment to a stronger HR function that would not only address adverse employee relations, but also be a potential resource to assist the city's directors in developing their personnel. I understand the city's not large enough to fund a full-time person, but a strong HR function, whether it's part-time or contract, I think is critical to the success at City Hall. The second issue real quick is with regards to the stormwater plan. I probably shouldn't admit this, but I read through the draft early one morning last week, along with a lot of coffee. It's an amazing, involved plan. I'm amazed at the commitment the city has to put into this effort, and I wish Director Todd the best of luck. I also appreciate that Mayor Holtz-Klaw addressed the potential misconception that people may have that a federally mandated inspection of a stormwater facility doesn't imply financial responsibility for the maintenance of that facility. But I think there's another perspective that needs to be considered, and that's this. Mill Creek residents have seen their surface water utility fee nearly triple from 2018 to 2021, from $78 to $200. And I'm not questioning at all whether the need was there for that. I think the study shows that. But what some citizens are concerned about is that while they're paying much higher fees, they're also potentially required to personally maintain stormwater facilities that are on private property, yet are having enormous amounts of public water directed into them. So in other words, is it equitable for the city to dispose of public stormwater in stormwater facilities on private property, collect the surface water fee, and on top of that, potentially require enormous personal expense from the citizens to maintain those facilities? So I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. Anyone else want to speak to the council this evening? Hearing none, that is the end of our agenda for this evening. So I will adjourn the meeting and we'll see you a week from tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everybody.